And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Pop the champagne. It's our 100th radio program here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl. We're happy to celebrate tonight.
100 radio shows on this legendary station, Radio 720 WGN. It is July 31st. It's Sunday, and it's so glad to be here with you, Lisa, and with Mike Costella, our executive producer, and Elif Garris, our producer. What's up, Elif?
Hi. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And we have a couple of special guests we'll bring out in just a bit. And tonight we're going to listen to three episodes of detective programming. We have The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective, Richard Diamond Private Detective, and Nick Carter Master Detective. All of this is brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor will star as a detective who investigates the disappearance of a woman in the crime drama The Snowman. And if you can recognize that voice, you will win a MyPillow, the most comfortable pillow you will ever own.
Wow. Very. That's a nice prize. Okay.
It sure is.
So the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Lieutenant Archie Hickox in 2009's Inglourious Basterds.
Well, if this is it, old boy, I hope you don't mind if I go out speaking to kings.
If you know who that great actor is, call us 312-981-7200. Win a MyPillow. We'll be right back. Weekday mornings, it has everything you need to know and some things you just need to see. WGN-TV Morning News is Chicago's must-watch morning news.
We are back. This is show 100 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
Well, if this is it, old boy, I hope you don't mind if I go out speaking to kings.
And let's talk to Jared from Plainfield. Hey, Jared.
Hello.
We're glad that you called in, and we're hoping you recognize that celebrity's voice.
I did, yes.
Well, who is it?
Michael Fassbender.
You are right, Jared. You are a winner. I'm so excited to give you a MyPillow. It's guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you will ever own. I own one, so I can say that firsthand, and you can visit them at MyPillow.com. Jared, thank you so much for sharing our 100th show with us.
Oh, you are very welcome. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you very much. You know what, Lisa?
What,
100
Carl?
Shows on the air here. And we have to thank our sponsor, Cat's Pride. This show is sponsored by Cat's Pride, and the CEO of the company is here. His name is Dan Jaffe. He's been in the studio before, and he's back. And we want to say thank you, Dan, for supporting this show with your great company. We appreciate that.
Well, Carl and Lisa, thank you. Congratulations on your centennial show. It's very exciting.
Well, you just celebrated a 75th anniversary of Oil Dry. Tell us a little bit about Oil Dry and Cat's Pride.
Well, yeah, if you do the math, it goes back to 1941 is when my grandfather started the company. And my father was saying that the average life of a business is about 7 years, and we've made it 75, and it's really due to our great products and our great people.
Well, you know what? I was lucky enough, and thank you to invite me to the 75th anniversary. It was on Friday, and I watched a video, and it was so interesting to see. And what a dedicated group of people you have working for you, and how happy everyone seems to work at your company. Great company that's right here in Chicago, and you have like a couple of floors of the Wrigley Building, right? And then you have plants all over the really all over the globe now, right?
Yeah, and I want to clarify, you absolutely had to be there because your listeners probably don't know. They probably do know that Katherine Heigl is the face and voice of Cat's Pride. What they probably don't know is you are instrumental in helping us make that happen.
Well, so, thank you. I appreciate that. Also, Dave Weiske's here. He's the Vice President of Customer Success. Dave, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you guys.
It was fun sitting at the table with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about 75 years, so I was able to be here for the 50th, and now I'm at the 75th.
Wow.
And if Dan will have me until I'm 81, I'll be here for the 100th. I could do the cycle.
Well, here's the great thing. Dan, we've known each other a long time. We played baseball together. It's how we first met. We've been friends for many, many years. And Dan was so kind to be the sponsor of this show. And we want to thank you. It's been 100 shows and couldn't have done it without you. Thank you so much. And Dan is also very generous and gives away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, the best kitty litter in the world, to a lucky winner every single month. He comes in here and does that. We're going to do that in just a few minutes. So somebody is going to be a lucky winner. But tell our listeners why Fresh and Light Ultimate Care is such a great product and why everyone listening that has a cat should be switching to that if you're not already using it.
Yeah, so the one thing that we're probably most proud of is that every pound of Cat's Pride cat litter is manufactured and processed by us. Our competitors are big companies who buy minerals out on the market and blend it and put it into their jugs and sell it under their brand name, which is great. But we can control the quality all the way back to the source. So the odor control, the absorbency, the clump strength, the lack of dust, all those kind of things, we know that every jug is going to represent what we want it to, because frankly, it represents the Oil Dry family, it represents the Jaffe family. And so we love giving away free cat litter because we know we will get loyal users by doing that. And so it's the more sampling we can get, the more users we're going to reel in.
So tell us how to identify. I know you've got the green jug, and it really stands out. How did you pick a green jug, and how did you get Catherine Heigl to be, why is she an important spokesperson for you?
Yeah, great question. So the green jug is important because it is a green, environmentally friendly product. This product, because it is 50% lighter, means you can put twice as many units on a truckload. So we cut the number of trucks in half, which cuts the carbon footprint in half. So if every listener out there would adopt Cat's Pride Fresh and Light, we could cut the carbon footprint of cat litter in half, saving millions of gallons of diesel fuel, no doubt.
And the great thing about it, too, it is half the weight. So when you're carrying it from the grocery store to your car and from your car to your home, it's half the weight, but it's the same amount of uses with the kitty litter as a much larger jug.
Yeah, you know, I like to poke fun a little bit at my competition. When I go on sales calls, I always say they ought to include, instead of some of the funky additives they put in their cat litter, they ought to put Bengay in there so that when you get it home, you could rub it on your back and take care of the back pain when you slip a disc. It's absolutely true. I mean, you can bring home half the weight but get all the uses. You're filling to 2.5 and 3 inches, and that's what you want is the volume. And Lisa, you asked about Catherine Heigl. We just feel so fortunate to be partners with Katie and Nancy Heigl. They have a family foundation, the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation. Katie lost her brother when he was only 15 years old. And when she became rich and famous, she started this foundation, and he was very passionate about companion animals. So they were funding this all themselves to end the needless suffering of cats and dogs throughout the West Coast primarily. And they were looking for a corporate partner who was as passionate about animal advocacy as they are. And so when we found them and they found us, it really was a marriage made in heaven. I got a very nice email from them the night of the 75th gala.
Wow,
they wish
great.
They could have been there. But Catherine's show, Doubt, which is on CBS, just got picked up.
That's
so she's
great.
Off taping
yeah.
it and couldn't come to our gala. But they're wonderful people, and we just feel so lucky to be partners with them.
That's awesome. And Dave, can you tell us where you can find Fresh and Light Ultimate Care?
Sure, Carl. So Walmart, Publix, Meijer, Albertsons, Giant Eagle, Super Value, Jewel locally here in the Chicagoland area. We've got Weiss Market, H.E. Buddy can go on. You can find it everywhere. And then for the dollar channel, we're talking about penetration in there. And as far as web-based applications, you've got Amazon and Chewy, which are phenomenal sites to go ahead and basically get your litter online.
And every time one of your listeners buys our product, not only do they get the absolute best lightweight, scoopable cat litter in America, But a donation, we make a donation, Oil Dry does, to the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation. And so we're helping to end the needless suffering of companion animals.
Right. So switch over to Fresh and Light Ultimate Care, and you're doing the world good and also all these kitty cats and dogs good all across the country. So it's great, Dan. Thank you so much. Let's give somebody, one of our listeners, a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Sound good?
Sounds great. All right. Can we get a drum roll?
Okay. David Lampke and his cat Aggie are going to get 1 year's free supply of Cat's Pride Fresh and Light. They are from Holcomb, Illinois.
Thank you, Dan. So nice of you. And we really appreciate you as a sponsor. Dave, great seeing you. And also your lovely daughter, Elise, is in the studio too. Hi, Elise. How are you? And that was a fun gala, wasn't it, on Friday? It was so nice. It was so much fun. Thank you for inviting me, Dan. And it's great to see you. And thanks to your company and to Cat's Pride. We really appreciate it. Everybody switch over to Cat's Pride Ultimate Care Fresh and Light. Okay, it's time for our first classic radio show, Lisa. You ready for this?
Yes, I am.
Howard Duff starred as Sam Spade on radio. Let's go back to June 8th, 1947 for the Calcutta Trunk Caper. Here's part one of The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Ahoy! It's me. Just came ashore.
From what? A boat?
A ship, Effie. A ship. Anything over 400 gross tons is a ship. Anybody knows that.
Well, may I inquire, what was your port of call?
Calcutta.
My, that was a quick trip.
Well, Effie, I'll tell you, I got so homesick for you, I couldn't stand it, so I assembled my gear and jumped ship.
Why, Sam, how sweet.
A fast there, gal. I'll be right down to dictate my report.
Bon
voyage, Effie.
I've been worried sick. Where have you been?
On my way to Calcutta, sweetheart, where the dawn comes up like thunder.
Sam, what are you talking about? Calcutta?
And the flying fishes play. Ready, Effie?
Sam, why did you want to go to Calcutta, of all places?
I didn't, Effie. I hate Calcutta. I was Shanghai. To, Mr. Philip J. Fogg, purser, SS Lurine.
How do you spell that, Sam?
Lurene.
Oh, that's pretty. Sam, how could you be shanghaied in this day and age? I mean, isn't it against the law?
Stow it, Effie. You're pumping bilge water.
Sam, I am not.
From Samuel Spade, license number 137596, when you have the time, regarding the Calcutta trunk caper. Dear Mr. Fogg, the following report will explain the enclosed voucher, which is a claim against your company for the amount of $500 and no cents. It will also answer any questions you might be asked concerning the recent unpleasantness on board your ship. It all started yesterday morning in San Francisco when my secretary announced briefly and caustically that there was a lady outside who wanted to talk to me. I judged that she was worth talking to. She was.
Your secretary let me in.
Well, I'm glad she did. What can I do for you?
I'm Marcia Hopkins.
I see.
Mrs. Marcia Hopkins.
I see.
However, my husband is dead.
I see.
It's about my sister that I've come to you, Mr. Spade. I'm dreadfully worried about her.
Who's your sister?
Miss Constance Pendleton. And she's become involved with a ne'er-do-well, a completely worthless scoundrel, and a real foreign bluebeard.
All three?
It's one man, Mr. Spade. A Bulgarian, Major Andrea Rodnik. They're going to be married this afternoon, and I'm positive that his only interest is in her money. I'm convinced that he's going to kill her soon after the ceremony. He's done it to other wives in Europe. I've warned Constance and pleaded with her, done everything I could to stop it. But she's completely infatuated with him and refuses to listen to me.
Mm-hmm. What do you want me to do?
Prevent the marriage, if you can. Get the truth about Rodnik's background and face Constance with it. Oh, Mr. Spade, in some way, you've got to make her realize the seriousness of the situation. He's a ruthless character.
Well, do what I can, Mrs. Hopkins.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Spade. Oh, I've felt so alone and helpless. Until now.
All right.
But you will do everything you can, won't you? We've got to save her life.
She daubed at her eyes with a stamp-sized handkerchief, patted the red gold hair at her temples nervously, smiled at me bravely, and swayed out. By telephone, I learned that the Vrodnik Pendleton marriage license had been issued 4 days before, and that on the same day, Constance Pendleton had withdrawn a savings account to the tune of $45,000. I'd always wanted to, so I did it. I called at the Bulgarian consulate.
What can I do on you?
What do you know about Major Andrei Vrodnik?
Ha! Andrei Vrodnik! On him we have hate, great sadness, with shame for the ground that walked under him.
Oh?
Ha! Andrei Vrodnik!
Why is he so popular?
On the devil he is driven without horns. 6 women he has killed. 6 times he has insulted the police of Europe by refusing to confess. We have proof of the murders, but never can we prove the proof on him.
Yeah, sometimes it goes that way.
Never do we find the bodies of the 6 women. Only their money in the name of Andrei Vrodnik. My pardon.
Well, think nothing of it. You're just upset on you.
You're interested on him. Why? You go to Europe?
No, Vrodnik comes here.
Here? Here on San Francisco? He marries again?
So I'm told.
Oh, by all the means, you must prevent it. Go to him, brave man. You do the world a service. Make violence on him. Even do you hang for it, your name will live.
With those valiant words goading me on, I left. The farther I got into the caper, the more it looked as if Marsh's fears for Constance Pendleton were very real and very well-founded. When Constance opened the door of her hotel suite, I could see 3 trunks and a number of smaller pieces of luggage all locked and ready to be taken out.
Yes?
Hey, Constance Pendleton?
Yes?
I'm a detective. My name is Spade.
Detective? What do you want?
I want to talk to you about that Bluebeard you're going to marry.
Get out of here.
You listen, I'll talk, and then I'll get out of here. I just left the Bulgarian consulate. Vrodnik has been accused of the murders of 6 women in Europe. Each of them were wealthy. Each of them married him, and each time Vrodnik came into all their money.
Are you trying to blackmail me because of the lies about my fiancé's past? If you are, you're wasting your time.
Well, no matter what I'm doing, I'm wasting my time. But to put you straight, your sister hired me, and I am now resigning. She's worried about you, not me.
Then you should spend more time investigating your clients, Mr. Spade. You could have saved both of us some time. I have no sister. This is my wedding day. Goodbye, Mr. Spade.
As I left the room, I maintained the stern facial expression I reserved for moments of great shock. But once outside the door, I allowed myself to be carried on the wave of rage and embarrassment for just a minute, and I kicked over 2 potted palms. As I leapt down the corridor, I was overtaken by none other than Marcia Hopkins.
Did you see her?
Let's talk about you first.
Did you stop the marriage?
Why did you really want that marriage stopped?
But I told you.
You told me you were her sister.
Oh.
She said she didn't have any sister.
All right, Sam, I did lie to you about that. But I'll tell you who I really am.
I don't want to know who you are. I don't ever want to know. All I want from you is my honestly earned fee and a brief but permanent goodbye.
Oh, no, Sam, please listen to me. We've got to save that girl. I have $500. That's all I have. Would it be enough?
What's your real name?
Marshall Vrodnik. Yes, he's my husband. I've been married to him for 10 years. We've traveled all over Europe, and I never knew where the money was coming from. He left me at times for 2 weeks or a month, and then when he'd come back, there'd be more money. I just realized that that's when he must have been killing those poor women. And I know that's what he's going to do this time. I just can't stand it. You've got to protect her.
That should be easy. We'll let him get married and meet him at the door with a bigamy warrant.
Then you will see me through this.
I might.
Oh. In my bag, there's $500. Take it. If we can't stop the marriage, then don't let him out of your sight. Not even for a minute. He's a beast, Sam. A beast.
All right, that's the first portion of the adventures of Sam Spade, detective. with the Calcutta Trunk Caper from June 8, 1947, starring Howard Duff, and we'll get back to that. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. 100 episode. This is it right here, our 100 episode. And thank you if you've been listening for all this time. And if you're a new listener, welcome aboard. We're tuning in to the adventures of Sam Spade Detective. Let's tune in to the conclusion now of the Calcutta Trunk Caper, starring Howard Duff.
Marcia dropped me in front of the Beast's Hotel, and I climbed some fake marble steps to the second floor and knocked at his door. The man who opened it was heavy, handsome, in a swarthy, coarse sort of a way, and glowing conceit through two eyes, one monocled, one not.
You're facing Major Andrei Vrodnik, first Bulgarian horse. What want you?
You are facing Saul Fox of the law firm of Fox, Smedley, Van Dusen, and Grip.
You overwhelm yourself.
I came here to warn you. If you go through with the marriage to Constance Pendleton, you're going to find yourself tangled with civil law.
Warned. Andrei Vrodnik, who has personally led more saber charges than you have teeth in your skull.
Yes.
Who has personally split, slashed, and impaled on his own blade more men than you have fingers and toes. You warn me? What is this talk?
You're going to have a bigamy charge slapped on you 5 minutes after you slip her the ring. The warrant signed by Mrs. Marcia Vrodnik.
Bigamy? Ha! I laugh. This is not bigamy.
Marcia's your wife, isn't she?
That bigamy was committed when I married her. I had another wife then. You call yourself a lawyer, then you know that only the second marriage is bigamy. The ones following that are nothing, nothing but interludes.
Okay, Major, go ahead and have your interlude. I'm just warning you.
Oh, speaks. We are being married on Redwood City from a justice of the peace 1 hour previous. Then we are sailing through the SS Lurin at midnight with our honeymoon. Already a droshky awaits for the baggage and luggage. Go now before I'm losing my temper. If you're ever in Calcutta, look me up. Da!
I could see the direct approach was getting me nowhere, so I decided to proceed by stealth. I waited outside the building, and when he left, I tailed him. He made four stops at a second-hand store, a hardware store, a surgical supply house, and an undertaker supply house. At these places, he purchased the following items: an oversized steamer trunk, black with brass fittings, a large ball of rope twine, two large lead sash weights, a set of surgical instruments, and at the fourth and final stop, the undertaking supply, he bought two items, a 20-foot length of rubber tubing and a pump. He returned to the second-hand store with his other purchases, put him inside the trunk, and ordered it sent up to Constance's hotel immediately, and thereupon, it took himself to the same place. Marcia was waiting in the empty lobby when he went in. I crouched behind a pillar, turned up my hearing aid, and listened.
Did you get the thing?
Yeah. Now listen, my darling, we must work fast. Yes. As soon as the trunk arrives, before she has the chance to get to
yes,
the telephone...
Yes, Andrea, but please, no cutting in the apartment.
As you wish, my darling. Now, you know what you have to do. Yes, while I'm getting her into the trunk, you'll change her clothes, put on her traveling dress, the hat with the...
What is it? What's the matter?
Nothing, nothing. Come, we must make haste.
They made haste to the elevators, and I made haste to the row of house telephone booths around the corner and called Constance's room.
Hello?
Mrs. Rodnick?
Speaking.
Listen, get out of that room right away. Don't take the elevator. Go down the stairs.
Who is this? What are you talking about?
I haven't got time to explain, and you haven't got time to listen. All those stories about your husband are true. He's going... My hand clawed out
Hello?
To the door handle, but I couldn't reach it. I felt as if
Operator.
The walls were closing in around me, and just
Can
before it got dark,
phone,
I had the crazy notion that I was inside Brodnik's big black trunk
Hello?
With the brass fittings. I could still hear Constance's voice way off in the distance, somewhere in the direction of Calcutta. I tried to shout to her, to warn her, and then the lid closed over me. I shook my head, trying to get the bells out of it. Then I remembered where I was and what had happened. I was still wedged into the bottom of a phone booth where I'd slumped when Brodnik sapped me. I got out of there somehow and grabbed a taxi for the Embarcadero. The The time was 11:55. The SS Lorraine was scheduled to sail at midnight. I was no sooner across it than they hauled up the gangplank and the ship started moving out of the berth. I didn't know where she was bound for and I didn't much care. I checked the passenger list and found that Major and Mrs. Andreev Brodnik were in stateroom 12, A deck. 1 minute later, I was hammering on the door of stateroom 12. The woman in Brodnik's stateroom was Constance, and she was not in a trunk.
I thought I told you to stop interfering in our affairs.
Yeah, your husband told me to, but I didn't like the way he did it.
Get out from here, get out!
I see you got your trunk in here where it's handy. Doesn't it make the stateroom kind of crowded?
Why don't you give up, Mr. Spade? Two times already, you are twice a fool. Marcia has no money to pay you, neither have I, even if she had the case. And believe me, she has not.
Oh, why do you even bother talking to him, Andre? Mr. Spade, will you go now, or will I have to call the steward and make a complaint against you?
I went. I still thought Marcia Hopkins was somewhere on that ship. I still didn't like the look of that trunk. I found the purser's office and went in. You looked at me as if you thought I was a stowaway, Mr. Fogg, and you were right.
I'll have to make arrangements for you to ride back with the pilot, Mr. Spade. You realize, of course, that you're subject to a fine.
Look, I don't want to do anything illegal. You know, it was just an impulsive thing. Couldn't I book a passage?
Well, there's the matter of your passport. We could arrange your visa and so on in San Pedro. We'll put in there in the morning.
Well, that's good enough. How much is the fare?
Well, let me see. That's $483.87, exclusive of tax.
Oh, hey, now, wait, I wasn't thinking of taking quite such an extensive voyage, you know. I just wanted to get a little sea air and, how much to Pedro?
I'm afraid you don't understand, Mr. Spade. This is not a coastwise steamer. Our first official port of call is Calcutta.
Yeah, I know, but Calcutta?
That's in India.
Don't you have something a little less expensive, like steerage or...
There is only one stateroom available, number 14A deck. Take it or leave it.
Okay, okay, Calcutta. After buying my passage to Calcutta, I had exactly 12 cents left. This I gave to the steward who showed me to my stateroom. He thanked me, kicked me in the shins, and left. Out on deck, a tall, red-nosed old gentleman in knickerbockers and a yachting cap was taking a turn around the deck. With him was a face I'd seen in the morning lineup down at the Hall of Justice a dozen times. He was a hotel thief by profession, name of Norman Gorman. He knew me, too, but he didn't give me a tumble. I fell into step with him.
Ah, sea air. Nothing like it, am I right?
Yeah, I guess it's okay, but there's so much of it.
Brisk, bracing, salt spray. Nothing like it. Hey, Norman, my lad.
I hate it. I hate boats. Suppose there was a fire on board.
Fire? Oh, ridiculous. This your first voyage to the Orient?
Yeah.
The inscrutable East.
You've made this trip before?
Oh, yes, indeed. I've worked this line. Yes, indeed. I make this voyage very often. Business interest out in India. Tea, you know. Runs in my family. Sturgis's Golden Orient in the little yellow package. Ever tried it?
No, I never indulge.
Huh? Don't drink tea. That's ridiculous.
Commodore, I need a drink. I ain't happy. Suppose there was a fire on board here.
Ah. Well, let's all have a drink.
Yeah, suppose there was.
Shall we?
A fire.
Come on, I'll shout you to a drink, sir.
Not me, Commodore. I just remember this is Fire Prevention Week. The nearest fire alarm to Brodnik's stateroom was on the companionway leading to the A-deck corridor. It was a glass-enclosed box with a small hammer hanging on a chain. I broke the glass and turned the key. In 3 seconds flat, the entire population of A-deck were shoving each other up the companionway, grabbing for life preservers as they went. The steward hammered on the door of stateroom 12, opened it, shouted inside, and Brodnik and Constance reluctantly came out. I ducked inside, grabbed the handle of the trunk, and started dragging it. When I got it into my stateroom, I broke the lock and lifted the lid. It was Marcia, all right. There was just time to see that before the stateroom door flew open and the ship's officer stuck his head in.
I said move it, you didn't you hear the
the alarm?
Why, no, I didn't. What's wrong?
Never mind that. Here, take this life preserver. Get going.
Okay,
now.
Okay. Don't touch me. It makes me nervous. Minutes later, the captain announced to the mob up on the deck that it was a false alarm, and the passengers drifted back to their cabins. I tried to look casual as I unlocked my stateroom door and walked in. Then I stopped trying. The trunk was still there, but the lid was standing open, and it was empty. I went down to B deck and found the cabin occupied by Norm and the Commodore. That door was locked, so I kicked it in. You could still see the marks on her wrists and ankles with a cord. It was the girl I had seen in the trunk. It was Marcia Hopkins, and she was very much alive.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was... Oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? You've got to help me, Sam.
Why should I help you?
He's crazy. They're both crazy.
It all depends on who's in the trunk, doesn't it, Marcia? When it was Constance, you didn't think he was so crazy.
Oh, don't you understand? I had to pretend that I'd help him. He was going to kill her right there in the hotel room. I told him it was too dangerous. If anybody looked in the trunk, it would be safer if she was in there alive. So he finally agreed and said he'd wait until we got out to sea to kill her. And then he was...
Yeah,
going
I know
to...
about that.
Oh, the idea was so awful, I couldn't stand it. I started to scream, and then he stuffed the gag in my mouth and tied me up. He must have used chloroform or something, because the next thing I knew, I was in the trunk. And that little dark man was leaning over me. He and that old man with the knickers, they brought me here.
No, they pulled a switch on you. You were the fall gal all along.
Oh, you've got to believe me. It was the only way I could save her life. You're the only one I can turn to, Sam. That little thief and the old man, they'd deliver me dead if there was an extra $25 in it. Oh, say you'll help me, Sam. Please say it.
When you ask me like that, What else can I say?
Oh, you do believe me, darling. You do believe me.
Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm sorry, Mr. Spade. Please step back inside. I promised my associate, Mr. Gorman, that I would not allow this young lady to risk her life by leaving this cabin.
You're getting into this caper the wrong end, Commodore. It's wound up. They've bungled it. It's no good anymore.
You may be right. But you understand my position, sir. I can't take any chances. Talk to Mr. Gorman?
Norm? Yeah, I talked to him.
He took you into his confidence?
Stop making with the pistol, Commodore. You don't know how to use it anyway.
Oh, heavens, Norm. You're as white as a sheet. What is it?
Oh, he's sick. Go get a doctor.
Yes, indeed. Right away.
Listen, Spade. Take her with you. Get out of here. I don't want no part of this.
You got it bad, Norm.
I'm sick, I tell you. The way I had it sized, this was a clean caper, a snatch. I figure the dame here's an heiress or something. Maybe they drop her off in L.A., connect some ransom and go on. I figure there was enough for all of us. Oh, but that creep, that Rodnick, he's crazy. He's a regular Jack the Ripper.
Stop babbling, Norm. Tell me what happened, exactly what happened.
I get a sinking feeling in my stomach every time I think about it. Well, I go in, see? He's very smooth, very businesslike. He offers me a drink. I accept it. He mixes a couple of highballs for me and the dame, then he starts talking. I guess she don't know all about it before this, because she gets just sick as I do. First, I think he's kidding. Then he drags out this set of cutlery like a doctor uses to operate on people. Only he's got something else in mind. The portal, you understand?
Oh, please. I don't want to hear anymore.
Being as it's you he has in mind, I don't blame you. My stomach...
Hey, Norm. Norm.
Oh. Here he is, the ship surgeon. Oh, dear me. What?
Stand away from him, please. Help me get him into the bunk.
Sure, Doc.
Take the shade off that light, please. Yes.
He's dead, isn't he?
Oh, yes, he's dead, of course. Who poisoned him?
I didn't waste any time answering him. I grabbed him by the arm. Before he could object, I was pushing him up the companionway to A deck. It was probably too late to save Constance's life. She'd drunk the same poison, and I was pretty sure she had. But if I was going to nail him for the murder of Constance, I had to get there before the evidence vanished. We got there just in time. I don't need to tell you what we saw, and I'd rather not. Rodnick rose slowly to his feet, clicked his heels military fashion, and bowed very low.
Ah, the ship's surgeon. How opportune.
Perhaps you could advise me, Doctor. After all, I am, in all honesty, even still a mere amateur at this sort of thing.
After Frodnik had been taken into custody, we took another turn around the deck. It was daylight, and the ship was lying to off San Pedro. This time, the fresh air really felt good, and so did Marcia.
It's all over, Sam.
Yes, sweetheart, it's all over.
But not between us. Say it, Sam. Say it's not all over between us.
How can it be?
I knew it. I knew you felt the same way. All my life before, it's been like a terrible nightmare. Never really happened.
But it did happen, sweetheart.
Oh, but you can forget it, darling, can't you? Please forget it.
I'd like to, Marcia. I really would.
Hold me close, Sam. Never let me go.
You're beautiful.
Is that all, Sam? Nothing else?
Yeah. Lots else. That's why I think we better say goodbye right now. Because when I feel like this, I get foolish. And if I get foolish with you, I'm likely to wake up in a trunk someplace. And that, Mr. Fogg, is the true account of the Calcutta trunk caper. As my voyage was interrupted through no fault of my own, I trust you will advise your company to refund my passage minus the one-way trip to San Pedro. Period, and a report.
Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff.
Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Did you know that? Did you know that, Lisa?
I sure did, Carl.
Howard Duff as Sam Spade there. The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective from June 8, 1947. The Calcutta Trunk Caper. That was an Armed Forces Radio rebroadcast from a CBS origination. And you heard Lorene Tuttle as Effie, his secretary. I hope you enjoyed The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. We have a weekend of detectives coming up a little later. Richard Diamond, private detective with Dick Powell. Then Nick Carter, master detective with Lon Clark. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is the WGN Radio Theater. It's our 100th show. Yesterday, we asked our listeners to text in some suggestions as to what you'd like us to do or play or whatever the case may be as our 100th show, sort of a celebration. And Steve from Chicago said, you know, why don't you guys, since you bicker all the time, why don't you play John and Blanche Bickersons? Right? Or Bickerson.
We like that idea.
We like that idea. And, you know, Lisa is an actress. I am not. So
we're both who we are. We're doing our very best.
But we're going to try this. We're going to cut this up into three different parts. It's about maybe a 9-minute little fun sketch.
It's called The Honeymoon is Over.
Right.
And Roger is our announcer. How apropos.
Why, thank you very much.
Why, thank you very much.
Here we go. Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf as John and Blanche Bickerson in The Honeymoon is Over. The Bickersons have retired. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and Mrs. Bickerson lies tense and sleepless in the dark as poor husband John, victim of raucous insomnia or Whimper's malady, reaches a climax during an acute attack of his strange ailment. Listen.
He'll stop now. I know he will. Oh, dear. John, turn over on your side. Go on. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
What is it, Blanche? What's the matter? What's the matter, Blanche?
There isn't another woman in the world who'd sacrifice her youth and her looks to live with a man who rattles himself to sleep like a lot of old bones in a bag. What do you think I'm made of, John?
Old bones?
You've got to stop it.
Stop what?
That snoring.
Oh, it's just your imagination, Blanche. I never snore.
John Bickerson, how can you say that?
Very easily. Listen, I never snore. I never snore. I never snore.
John! John?
What's the matter? Why don't you let me sleep, Blanche?
What about me? What am I to do when you grind away like a buzzsaw? I never sleep at all.
You were fast asleep when I came home from my lodge meeting.
What time did you come in?
I don't know. Put out the lights.
You said you'd have one drink and get home at 10.
Well, I had 10 drinks and got home at 1. You knew where I was all the time. Now, don't start beefing about it.
I didn't know where you were. I would have called you.
What for?
Because the express man came around again with that package. It's from Kentucky, and there are freight charges on it.
Why didn't you pay him? I've been waiting for that package.
What is it?
It's my dividend. I belong to the Bottle of the Month Club.
I'm just sick and tired of the way your whole life is wrapped up in a bottle of bourbon. Maybe you would like me better if I wore a label and put a cork in my mouth.
You needn't wear a label, Blanche.
There you go with your subtle insults again. When am I supposed to talk to you? You rush away in the morning and come home in the night when I'm sleeping. Sit up and talk to me, John.
Blanche, I'm dead tired. I don't know what time I came home, but I was in the kitchen for over an hour.
I know. I heard you puttering around in there.
I wasn't puttering. You asked me to fix the electric toaster and the curling iron now, didn't you? Well, I fixed them both.
Do they work?
They work fine. Except the toast pops up with a permanent.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. Did you turn off all the lights?
Turned off the lights.
I suppose you left a mess in the kitchen.
No mess.
I hope you locked the back door. The cat got out 3 times last week.
Cat won't get out tonight.
Where'd you put him?
In the bird cage.
Bird cage? Where's the canary?
In the cat.
John Bickerson!
Please stop, Blanche. You're just knocking yourself out. There's nothing happened to the canary, and the cat's fast asleep in the oven.
Well, don't scare me like that. Are you sure all the animals are taken care of?
I'm sure.
How about the fishbowl? Did you heat up the water for the new baby goldfish?
I heated his water, gave him his pablum, burped him twice, and changed his diaper. Would you put out the lights and let me sleep?
Why are you so cross and disagreeable all the time, John?
Because I'm exhausted.
Well, that's not true. You'd rather stay out the whole night carousing with your roughneck friends. Just kills you to spend the night with me.
Oh, it doesn't kill me.
We'll be back with part 2 of The Bickersons.
All right, we're here, hour 2 of the WGN Radio Theater, and we should get back to this Bickersons, right, Roger?
I think we should do that as soon as I do that and this. Welcome back to tonight's episode of The Bickersons. When last we left them, John was trying to get some sleep at 3 a.m., but Blanche has a few issues.
It's a funny thing that I don't need anybody else. I'm always just satisfied just to be with you.
Well, you're in better company than I am. Good night, Blanche.
Keep it up, John. Keep adding insult to injury. Never a kind word or a compliment. Just work me to death like a slave. Pick up my meals and complain about my cooking.
I never complain about your cooking.
Then why didn't you eat that pie I made tonight?
I did eat it. I ate every bit of it.
Well, you didn't like it.
I couldn't chew it. The undercrust was like cardboard.
Undercrust?
Yeah.
That pie didn't have any undercrust. I gave it to you on a paper plate.
That paper plate tasted better than the pie. Don't make pies anymore, Blanche. I hate pies. I hate all desserts. Basically, that orange macaroon broccoli dream cake you made was horrible. Don't make any more desserts, Blanche, please.
I never know what to make for you. You've got the weirdest appetite of any man alive.
Yeah, sure, weird.
For 2 months running, you wouldn't eat anything but pig knuckles. Pig knuckles, pig knuckles.
Well, what about it?
Just because you wanted pig knuckles, I had to cook my finger to the bone. Why don't you hire a chef? I cook for you. I scrub for you. I sew for you. Do I get any thanks?
Thanks.
Thanks. That's all the thanks I get. No love, no affection. How I envy Louise Shaw. Her husband treats her more like a friend than a wife.
Well, settle down, will you, Blanche?
No, I won't. Do you think Louise ever makes breakfast for Mel? Not that lazy lump. She makes him go to work every day without a morsel of food. Just a kiss for breakfast. Would you be satisfied with that, John?
Sure, send her over in the morning.
I mean, would you be satisfied if I gave you a kiss for breakfast?
Blanche, I'd be satisfied with anything if you just let me get some rest.
Answer me, do you want a kiss for breakfast?
Yes.
Well, ask for it.
Blanche,
I want a kiss for breakfast.
Ah, don't do me any favors. I'll never let you kiss me again as long as I live. Ugh. Not until you apologize.
Apologize for what? What have I done?
It's what you haven't done. You haven't told me you love me for years. Why don't you say you're sorry you married me, John?
Because I'm not.
Am I the only wife in the world for you?
You're the only wife in the world for me.
You're lying. Swear.
I swear I'm lying. I mean, I'm not lying.
Well, that's no way to swear. Say it nicely.
You're the only wife in the world for me.
Really, John?
Really, I wouldn't have another wife like you for anything.
And we'll have part three of The Bickersons coming up a little later on.
Okay, in this hour, we're going to tune in to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, from 1952, starring Dick Powell. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor will star as P.T. Barnum in the biography The Greatest Showman on Earth, the story of P.T. Barnum, founder of the Barnum and Bailey Circus.
What do they win?
They will win a $25 gift card for Lumel Nottis.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Blanche, do you know this one?
Blanche knows it.
All right. So here's a hint. This actor played Jean Valjean in 2012's Les Miserables.
If I stay silent, I am damned.
All right, you know who that actor is. Call us, 312-981-7200. He has a very nice singing voice there, Lisa.
He sure does.
I get mistaken for this guy all
do
the time.
Do you? Your singing voices are quite similar.
Time. Well, no, just our looks.
Oh, I thought you meant your voice.
All right, we'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to show 100 of the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
If I stay silent, I am damned.
And we've got Maria on the line. Hi, Maria.
Hi.
Hi, you recognize that gorgeous voice?
I did.
What is
it? Hugh Jackman.
You are right, Maria. You are a winner. You've won a $25 gift card for Lumel Nottis. I'm a Chicago's best deep dish pizza and my personal favorite. And you can check them out at lumelnottis.com and visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations.
Thank you. I love their pizza.
Thank you. We're so glad you're listening to our show.
It's a great show. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Blanche. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I just want to mention we've had a couple people text in and ask if this is Carl and Lisa doing this live radio drama,
yeah.
And it certainly is.
With Roger Badish's help as
you
the
betcha.
Announcer.
So we're having fun.
Yeah, we have one more little segment of the Bickersons. We'll do that a little later in this hour, but right now it's time for a detective adventure of Richard Diamond, Private Detective, created by Blake Edwards. It aired on NBC Radio from 1949 to 1953. Actor, crooner Dick Powell starred as Richard Diamond because he played Philip Marlowe in the RKO film Murder, My Sweet. He did such a great job. Radio beckoned and said, hey, want to play a detective on radio? And he said, absolutely. The theme song, I always thought this was interesting, the theme song to this series is called Leave It to Love, and it was whistled actually by Dick Powell at the beginning of every episode, so you'll hear the whistling. And I hope you enjoy this. Let's go back to January 25th, 1952, for the Al Brenner's case starring Dick Powell, part one of Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency for Mayhem of Distinction.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yes.
Oh.
No, ooh.
Why?
Mayhem of Distinction.
I said that.
And I said ooh.
Was it that bad?
Mm-hmm.
Say it.
Diamond Detective Agency for Mayhem of Distinction.
Ooh.
See?
Yeah. But what am I going to do?
About what?
About slogans. Gets tough after a while.
How about when I call you up, I give the slogan instead?
Well, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
Well, I'll have to give you an audition.
All right.
I need a new one every morning.
Fine.
Starting tomorrow morning.
I'll call you back the minute I have one.
Bless your heart.
I'm going to see you tonight.
Sure, about 7.
Now, I'll call you back the minute I have one.
Diamond?
Well...
What?
Can I talk to you?
Sure, come on in.
Rick?
Somebody just came in.
Oh.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow. Been a long time, Tiny.
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
I got a proposition.
You do, huh?
Yeah. How'd you like to make yourself $2,500?
Tiny, I like money, but when a guy like you has a proposition...
It's on the up and up, Diamond.
Well, if it is, it's the first time.
Well, all you gotta do is listen. If you don't like it, you don't take it.
For $2,500, I'll listen.
You read the papers this morning?
Yep.
Al Brenner skipped.
I read that.
Al Brenner was supposed to appear before the grand jury.
They had enough on him to put him away for 20 years.
There's a reward.
$5,000.
Yep.
Uh-huh. $2,500 would be half of that, wouldn't it?
Just half.
Where is he?
Uh-uh.
That's what you wanted me to listen to, isn't it?
But I'm not sure I know where he is. I just think.
You want me to make sure?
And I want you to help. I got the lead, but I don't want to turn him in.
You know what happens if the boys find out you tip me?
Oh, I give it a lot of thought.
Look, Tiny, I gotta be honest. I don't like you.
Well, that's okay.
I never did.
Well, I done you a few favors when you was a cop.
You came out all right, and I still didn't like you. I don't like professional stoolies.
Well, okay, I'm not
And especially,
asking.
I don't like one for a partner.
Well, then take the whole $5,000 and pay me for my services.
No, no. If I can do Walt Levinson a favor and bring in Brenner's and still make $2,500, we'll split it right down the middle.
It's a deal?
As long as I don't have to see you too much.
Now, this is what I've got. There's a guy named Stringer. You heard of him?
I don't think so.
But he's not a local boy. He's an import. Used to work for Brenner's back in St. Louis, 1929-30. When Brenner's moved east, he stayed and did himself some good.
That's before my time.
Stringer is in town.
So what?
I hear Brenner's ain't even skipped town. I hear he's hiding out right in town somewhere until the heat cools.
Well, that'd be smart. He knows they'd cover everything in and out.
Well, Brenner skipped yesterday morning. The law didn't spot it until the afternoon. I heard about Stringer, and I started thinking. Brenner's needs a contact. He's smart, and he wouldn't trust none of his local boys.
So Stringer's it?
Yeah.
That's all you've got?
No. I followed Stringer last night. And I lay 10-1 he saw Brenner's.
Where?
You meet me tonight at the corner of Maple and Palm.
Maple and Palm?
Long Island.
Well, what's out there?
You'll be there. I'll show you.
Oh, look, Tiny, you...
Yeah, I'm just playing it safe, Diamond. I tell you everything. You could make the score alone, and I couldn't open my mouth.
Okay, Tiny. What time?
8:00.
Well, I'd made a deal with Tiny Gillespie. Half of a $5,000 reward for Al Brenner's, one of the biggest hoodlums in the business. I'd known Tiny for a lot of years. He was a professional stoolie who knew the underworld like the inside of his shirt and didn't have a friend to his name. It was dangerous doing business with Tiny, but $2,500 can take the edge off a lot of danger. I went home, changed my clothes, and was about to pick up the phone to call Helen. Yeah?
I called your office.
Oh, hi, dear.
How's this? Diamond Detective Agency. If you can't get Sherlock or Perry Mason for $100 a day, I start chasing.
Helen.
Pretty good, huh?
Oh, it's great.
I thought so.
Just great.
Why'd you leave your office so early?
I was just going to call you.
Rick.
I can't make it until later, sweetheart. I'm sorry.
But I started such a wonderful dinner.
And I started making $2,500.
$2,500?
Yes, dear.
Well, you just take your time. The dinner's not that important.
I knew you would understand.
Now, work hard and don't worry about me. I'll see you when you solve the case.
And get the $2,500.
Rick, you don't think that I'm only interested in the money?
Not in $1,000,000. Years. Because Helen was so interested in my welfare, I managed to borrow her convertible, and by 8:00, I was parked at the corner of Maple and Palm on Long Island. It was easy to understand why Tiny had picked the spot to meet. It was as dark as a mine shaft, and there wasn't a house within a half mile. I lit a Camel, sat back to wait. It got to be 8:15, and Tiny still hadn't arrived. By 8:30, I was beginning to wonder if he ever would. And by 9, I was sure he wouldn't. I turned the car back for town, kicked myself all the way there. A guy like Tiny you couldn't trust, and I was feeling a little more than guilty for getting involved. By the time I hit Broadway, I was madder than a wild bull with a hot foot. I turned right, drove down to the river in a dive called the Purple Garter. a hangout for winos, bums, and a stoolie named Tiny Gillespie. There were only a few customers in the room and a bartender named Sampson that I'd done business with before.
Hello, Mr. Diamond.
Oh, hello, Sampson. I'm looking for Tiny Gillespie.
Ain't here. How about a drink?
No, I'm not interested in a long illness. Have you seen Tiny?
Earlier.
What's earlier?
Around 7. He left around 7.
Know where he was going?
He didn't leave no forwarding address. What's he done?
I was just looking for him. If you see him, tell him that, will you?
I'll tell him. Oh. Hey. Friend of yours.
Well, well, well.
Hi, Rick. Hit the skids?
Oh, what are you doing? Looking for a chocolate malt?
Hello, Samson.
Hi, Lieutenant.
Not thirsty.
You guys are turning into snobs.
You don't give us much choice, Samson. It's that or a stomach pump.
I shoulder your insults with complete disinterest.
Who are you looking for, Fatty?
Who says I am?
Well, you're wearing that official frown. Prune Brow Levinson.
Samson, you seen Tiny Gillespie?
Ho-ho.
Tiny's getting popular.
What do you mean, ho-ho?
Just ho-ho.
What do you mean he's getting popular?
Mr. Diamond was just asking for him.
Ho-ho.
That's what I meant.
What did you want him for, Rick?
He was supposed to meet me.
Why?
Just to talk.
About what?
Oh, stop acting like a cop. What's it all about?
I'm just in checking on Tiny's activities prior to 8 o'clock tonight.
And just what did Tiny do prior to 8 o'clock tonight?
For one thing, he got himself killed.
It all started when a professional stool pigeon named Tiny Gillespie thought he knew the whereabouts of Al Brenner's missing defendant in a grand jury investigation. Tiny had agreed to meet me at 8 o'clock that night, but he never showed up. And when I went looking for him, I ran into Lieutenant Walt Levinson, 5th Precinct Police. Walt told me Tiny had been killed. We went out to the station where we talked more about it.
He was killed sometime between 7:30 and 8.
Where?
About a half mile from where you say you were supposed to meet him.
How?
Beaten to death.
What?
That's right. Somebody really worked him over. Wait a minute, I got a medical report here, son. Yeah, here it is. Broken back, fracture of the femur, fracture...
Okay.
He was a mess. Want a cookie, Bright Eyes?
No, thanks, Fatty. Help yourself. That part of your diet?
Yeah. Rips the weight off you.
That's obvious. Tell me, Skinny, you have a hood named Stringer?
Stringer?
St. Louis. Worked for Al Brenner's in 1929 and 30.
Well, what's he got to do with it?
Tiny's been following him. Tiny thought Stringer was working as a contact for Brenner's.
Tiny say Brenner's was still in town?
He thought so. He said he followed the Stringer someplace, and he believed he met with Brenner's.
Rick, you ought to know better than to get mixed up with a guy like Tiny.
You ought to double date with my conscience.
I take better care of it than you do. Want some coffee?
Yeah, black.
Sugar?
Or the usual, 12 lumps.
Listen, sweetie pie, if Brenner's is close and Tiny was supposed to meet you a half mile from where he was killed...
It's a good bet Brenner's could still be in that area.
Unless he skipped again and found out Tiny had him spotted.
Well, he knows he'd never get out of town now, and I don't think he's too worried about killing Tiny. I don't think he'd ever figure Tiny would tell anybody what he knew.
He knows Tiny's done business with the law.
And he knows that the law would have come instead of Tiny.
That's right.
I think Brenner's is worried, but if he's got a good hideout, I think he'll stay put.
Here's the lab report on Tiny. The scrapings from the bottom of his shoes indicate fertilizer and new grass. Tiny's body was lying at the bottom of a gully. Nothing but dirt and clay.
Any houses near?
Not for miles.
Show me on the map where the body was found.
Sure. Right there.
I was supposed to meet him there. Maple and Palm.
Sure isn't much in that section.
Tiny couldn't have been too far from me before he was killed. He wouldn't have picked Maple and Palm if it was very far from what he wanted to show me.
That makes sense, but they sure wouldn't dump his body too close to Brenner's hideout.
Okay. Maybe they drove him 5 or 10 miles. 5 or 10 miles in every direction from Maple and Palm.
Yeah, that's a lot of territory.
Yeah, I know. Well, you better start checking it. I've got a hunch he'll dig up Brenner's.
I'll put out an APB on a string of guys as soon as I check the records and talk with St. Louis for a description.
Fine. I'll see you later.
Where are you going?
To see if I can beat you to Brenner's.
Now, look, Bright Eyes.
Oh, honey, with Tiny dead, there's a big old 5,000 all in one chunk. I'll let you know if I find Brenner's. I don't want the glory, just the loot.
All right, that is the first portion of Richard Diamond, Private Detective, going back to January 25th, 1952, with the Al Brenner's case starring Dick Powell. And you hear Dick Powell talking to the actor Alan Reed right there. Alan Reed was the voice of Fred Flintstone in the cartoons. He was also Pasquale on Life with a Luigi, Lisa.
That's your mom's favorite.
Yeah,
so that's
and
how I know
we've
that.
Got a lot of texts coming in from people that said they're liking Lisa as Blanche Bickerson.
And Carl.
Yeah, no. But,
come on, as the Bickersons. No,
but
we're a team
listen,
here.
Listen, you're carrying it. You're the actress here.
No,
great
we're a
job,
team
Lisa.
Here. We're having fun together.
We'll get back to our, we have like another segment of Bickersons in
one
a little
more.
Bit. Do we have a break here, Elif? All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, we're back. It's a WGN Radio Theater, 12:35 on a Monday morning. And this is show 100. We're going to have our little Bickersons sketch after the conclusion to Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Let's go back to January 25th, 1952 for the Al Brenner's case starring Dick Powell.
I left the station, climbed in the car, and I drove to a gas station where I filled up with gas and picked up a map of the Long Island section. Then I went back to my office and started checking the Long Island phone directory. I knew it would take me a week to find the new lawn, and Walt was already doing that, so I concentrated on something else. I looked for some place that might sell fertilizer and grass seed. There was one such place in that area, Hudson Garden Supplies, and there was a phone. I took a chance that maybe the owner or someone lived there and called it.
Ah, yeah.
Is this the Hudson Garden Supply?
Huh?
Is this the Hudson Garden?
Yeah, who is this?
Well, who is this?
This is Hudson. Who is this?
My name's Diamond.
Well, what do you want? It's after 12.
Did you sell any fertilizer or grass seed in the last 2 or 3 weeks?
Are you kidding?
You do sell fertilizer?
Oh, look, wise guy.
Oh, come on. This is police business.
Police?
Lieutenant Walt Levinson, 5th Precinct.
I thought you said your name was...
Diamond. Now, you want us to come out and pull you out of bed?
Oh, look, I'm sorry. It sounded like a gag.
Well, have you sold any fertilizer or grass seed in the last few weeks?
Oh, yeah. I sell a lot of fertilizer. It's good fertilizer.
Any grass seed?
Yeah.
To an address in that area?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I sold a big load.
Who'd you sell it to?
Well, I don't remember the bill. I'll have to look it up.
Look it up.
Well, now?
Unless you want us to come out there and help you.
Well, okay. Hold the phone.
Good job.
Hello?
Yeah?
That grass seed went to 7788 Shoreham Drive.
What's the name on the bill?
The Hillview Rest Home.
You sell any other grass seed the last week?
No, but I sold a lot of flowers and plants and plenty of fertilizer.
You must love your work. I climbed back into the car and headed back for Long Island and 7788 Shoreham Drive. 40 minutes later, I pulled up on a lonely, dark road and turned the car lights out. The Hillview Rest Home stood out against the moon like a lonely castle. It was dark, except for a light in one of the wings, and the grounds were surrounded by a high fence. I got out of the car and started walking. I kept going until I found a section of fence that a man might climb and not be seen from the house. I went up and over, dropping down and stopping my fall with my hands. When I felt my hands, they were wet and covered with new grass. There were about 100 yards between the fence and the main building, and the moon reflected off the wet grass like a mirror. If anybody was watching from the house, I'd never make it without being seen. I bent as low as I could and ran about halfway and stopped, listening. It was like a bad dream, crouching under the moon, trying to make my breath come out slowly so it wouldn't show against the cold, and feeling like I wanted to dig a hole and hide right there, or better still, wake up. I started again, running low, looking from side to side, but never behind. I got to the main building and slammed myself against it. I stayed there until I caught my breath. Then I moved around to the front door and tried it. I got the surprise of my life. It was open. I found myself standing in a large room, dark, except for a small red light burning over a door at the back. A staircase to my left led to the floors above, and there was another smaller room to my right that was black except for the shafts of moonlight slanting down through the barred windows. barred windows and an open door. Something was wrong.
Don't move.
Hmm?
Don't move.
He was behind me, probably waiting behind the door. When I came in, and with the door unlocked like that, it figured he had been expecting me.
If you turn around, I'll shoot you.
In that case, you'll pardon my back.
I'll take your gun.
I don't have one.
What would you call this?
Oh, that's really just a big cigarette lighter?
Yeah. Now your wallet.
Oh, look, what is this?
Richard Diamond, private detective. Yeah. A private detective.
Who may retire.
Yeah, I think I can guarantee it.
Did you spot me crossing the lawn?
When you climbed the fence, it set off an alarm.
Well, my car broke down. I thought
you
maybe...
You could use the phone.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I don't believe you.
Who is it, Barnes?
You better come down and see. He's a private detective.
Turn on a light.
He had a gun.
Well.
You know him?
Hello, Brenners.
Yeah, he's a private cop, all right. Used to be a legit cop. How are you, Diamond?
Surprised. I thought you skipped.
You know I didn't. Tiny got to you, huh?
Tiny?
I told you. Shut up. Look, you got to get out of here. I'll lose my whole business.
You're making enough off.
But now with this private detective and that man last night, no telling how many more.
How'd Tiny find me?
I don't know who you're talking about, Brenners. I'm just as surprised at seeing you as...
Oh, you're lying.
Brenners, please, he might have told the police what he knows.
They'd be here by now if he had.
You're going to be in a little trouble hiding out a man who's wanted by the federal government.
He's right, Brenners. Whether he's trying to talk himself out of a jam or not, he's right.
Relax. When Stringer gets here, I'll leave.
Thank goodness.
In the meantime, you better take care of Diamond.
You mean like...
Yeah, the way you did with Tiny Gillespie.
No, but isn't there...
You don't want to lose this place, do you?
No.
And I don't want anybody around to talk about me.
How come you worked Tiny over like that? Why didn't you just use your gun?
You're in for a treat, Diamond.
You're going to have a hard time working me over like that.
Oh, we're not going to do a thing. Hey, better take him downstairs. Stringer should be here any minute.
Yeah, all right. Walk over to that door.
Nice seeing you again, Tom.
Yeah.
Open the door. Go on, I'll have to shoot you. Keep going. Down those stairs.
You're making a big mistake.
I have no choice.
State's evidence might get you off easy.
Oh, and a murder charge?
Might get just life.
And I might not. Stop right there. Open the door and go on in.
Oh, now look.
I'll shoot you right here.
Okay.
Alf. Alf!
I'm here.
What is that?
I got somebody for you, Alf. Get in there.
Oh, now, look.
Go on!
I was locked in the basement, and there was someone else there with me. It was a man. His head was shaved clean, and his eyes were wild and staring. He was sitting in a corner, and as he pulled himself up, he looked at me, tipped his head to one side like he was listening to something.
I've got to take care of you, too, huh?
Then he was on his feet, shoulders hunched, and his arms hanging at his sides. And even bent over like that, he must have been 6.5 feet tall. He shuffled towards me like an ape, and I realized what it was that had given Tiny such a beating.
You're bigger than the last one. You gonna give me a little fight?
Easy, boy, easy. Put my back to the wall and kept circling him, but he seemed to enjoy watching me try to get away. He'd reach out, and when I'd duck, he'd smile a horrible mouthful of teeth and rub his hands together like a little kid with a new game. I kept moving, talking to him, trying to calm him down, but I knew there wasn't a chance. The basement was a solid 4 walls and the heavy locked door, and one of us would have to die before the night was over. The way things stood, it was pretty obvious who it was going to be. And if I kept running, I was going to get tired and die a lot quicker. I stopped.
Don't you want to play no more?
He looked almost unhappy, like he wanted to keep on playing and wasn't going to be able to. He started moving in again, and I kicked him as hard as I could in the stomach. He doubled over, and for a second I felt bad. Then he straightened and rushed me. He got his arms around me, and it was like being caught by a boa constrictor. The harder I fought, the tighter he squeezed.
I started to pass out. Thought I heard shots. Then he picked me up over his head and threw me the length of the room. I tried to sit up, but I was too dazed. In the half light, I watched him shuffle in, his arms swinging. He was so strong and didn't even know he was fighting a man. Just a doll that wouldn't play anymore, and he was going to break it in 1,000 pieces. He reached for me just when somebody on the other side of the door started shooting. The giant stopped as the bolt of the door was pulled back, and then he turned.
Rick! You come to fight me, too?
Look out, Walt.
Rick.
How'd you find me, Walt?
Located Stringer and tailed him. Saw Helen's car parked outside the fence. What is that thing over there?
Oh, just an animal. It used to be a man, I guess. That's the way Tiny got killed.
Ooh. How bad are you?
Oh, just shaken up. But another couple of minutes and...
Here, I'll give you a hand.
Thanks. Oh. You get Brenner's?
Yeah, they're putting him in the car. Lean on me.
I'm okay. What was all the shooting outside the door? Oh, Barnes.
He didn't want to let me in.
Who told you I was down here?
The minute we came through the front door, Barnes headed down the stairs. I spotted him and went after him.
Oh, bless your little heart.
What are you going to do with that $5,000?
Oh, Walt, I'm going to buy you the best present you ever had in your life. Like it, dear?
Oh, it's a beautiful stove.
Well, it's really nothing.
Nothing?
Got the beast doing a summer safari in Africa.
No, but by Jove, this is mink.
What did you expect, old girl? Unborn meadow mouse?
No, but look here. There isn't a mink within 10,000 miles of Africa.
Come to think of it, he was rather winded. Now, don't laugh, old girl. That mink was the biggest animal I've ever seen. Stood 6 feet high and weighed 180. Couldn't kill him.
Well, then how did you ever get the stove?
Gave him a haircut.
Oh, no. Well, you sit right there and play the piano while I run upstairs and put on something that'll show off my stove.
All right, dear. Mm-hmm. What a memory.
Oh, baby, what I couldn't do with plenty of money and you. In spite of the worry that money brings, just a little filthy lucre buys a lot of things, and I can take you to places you'd like to go. But outside of that, I've no use for dough. It's the root of all evil, of strife and upheaval. But I'm certain, honey, that life could be sunny with plenty of money and you.
That was pretty.
Thank you. Ooh.
How do I look?
Oh, that mink never had it so good.
Are we going to dinner?
Right, dear. I'm going to buy you the fanciest... Oh, I'll get it. Asher's Mink Farm.
Rick, your present just arrived.
Oh, I hope you like it, Walt.
I don't know how to thank you.
Well, it's nothing.
I know.
Wear it in good health, and I'll see you soon.
I'll never forget you for this, old man.
Bye.
Walt?
Mm-hmm. He loved his present.
Well, you got him a present, too.
Well, he saved my life. I bought him a beautiful cashmere uniform.
Cashmere uniform?
He couldn't get over it. Now, let's go, dear.
Rick.
Hmm?
You must have spent an awful lot of money.
For the people I love. I've still got about $1,500 left.
That's pretty good after taxes.
Taxes?
Rick.
Oh, give me a pencil. Give me a pencil.
Right there on the stand.
Oh.
Didn't you take out any withholding?
$5,000. 750 cashmere uniform. 2750 mink stole. Take away. Oh!
Ricky!
I owe the government $1,600.
Thank you.
Tonight's transcribed adventure of Richard Diamond was written and directed by Blake Edwards with music by Frank Worth. Virginia Gregg played the part of Helen Asher, and Alan Reed was Lieutenant Levinson. Others in the cast were Howard McNear, Ed Max, Jane Avello, and Joel Samuels. Listen next week for another exciting adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
There you have it. That is Richard Diamond, private detective from January 25th, 1952. That is the Al Brenner's case starring Dick Powell. You heard Alan Reed as Lieutenant Walt Levinson. Generally, Ed Begley, which is Ed Begley Jr.'s daddy, played that role. But on this episode, Alan Reed did, who played Fred Flintstone in the cartoons, Virginia Gregg in the cast. That was originally sponsored by Camel Cigarettes, but we removed all the cigarette commercials. And that's heard on ABC. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we have a few minutes, so we're going to give you the conclusion to The Honeymoon is Over. But first, our announcer.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, our part three and concluding portion of The Bickersons. It's 3 o'clock in the morning still, and Blanche Chest won't let John go back to sleep.
I wish I'd known more about you before we were married.
Oh, you knew everything.
I didn't know about that tattoo you have on your stomach. That's a real indication to
that
a man's...
What?
That tattoo. That's a real indication to a man's character. I'd wish I'd known.
Now, wait a minute, Blanche. I had that tattoo put on my stomach when I was just a silly kid.
Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, a hula girl with a big dimple in her chin.
That dimple was there before she was. Don't go digging up my stomach at this time of the night.
Well, why don't you have that ugly picture removed?
Okay, I'll have it removed in the morning.
Well, you say it, but you won't do it. Have it done. Now.
What?
Go on. Get up and get rid of that hula girl.
Are you out of your mind? It's almost 4 o'clock in the morning.
You'd get rid of her quick enough if you were married to Gloria Gooseby.
Now, don't start with Gloria Gooseby.
She'd holler plenty if you didn't do what she liked.
I always do what she likes, and she's never hollering. I hate the sight of Gloria Gooseby. I never want you to mention her name again. Do you hear me, Blanche?
Don't yell at me. I'm sick.
Sick?
Dr. Hershey told me there was something the matter with my head.
You don't mean to say you paid a doctor for that?
Well, make fun of me if you like, but I know it won't last long.
What's the matter with you, Blanche?
Nothing.
Are you really sick?
So sick I could die. I think I'm poisoned. I've got the most awful indigestion. Call the doctor, John.
You don't need the doctor. I'll take care of you. Just lie there and I'll fry some radishes in hot sauerkraut juice.
Radishes and hot sauerkraut juice.
Finest cure in the world for indigestion. Lie still.
John Bickerson, I don't want any of your insane remedies. You'll treat me for indigestion and I'll probably die of liver trouble.
Listen, if I treat you for indigestion, you'll die of indigestion. Now, do you want me to help you or not?
I'll feel a lot better if you don't just scream at me and tell me you love me.
I knew you weren't sick.
Tell me you love me, John.
I love you.
How much do you love me?
How much do you need?
Now, John, Easter Sunday's only 2 days away, and I haven't got a new hat.
What happened to the hat you bought last Easter?
It's in a box on the dresser, but that hat's worn out.
Well, wear the box. You can't be squandering my money on Easter hats.
Please, John, just this once. I saw a wonderful hat with the reversible brim that can be turned up or down.
How much is it?
$60.
Well, turn it down.
Turn it down. Turn it down. I turn everything down because you're always looking for bargains. When you married me, you didn't get any bargain.
How well I know it.
Oh, you know what I mean. You're only like the kind of woman who would pass up a mink coat to buy a cheap fur.
Well, what's wrong with buying a cheap fur?
Nothing. Would you like to see the one I bought, dear?
What?
It's a dyed rabbit choker, and it's only cost $94.
$94 for a dead rabbit?
Don't get upset.
Blanche. How can you squander my money like that? I deny myself everything. Last week, I had all my teeth pulled out so I could save money on eating. I've been sewing collars on your old bloomers and wearing them for shirts. I haven't even got a pair of pants. Yesterday, I hung a wisp broom from the plaid skirt, and then I went to work as a Scotsman. And she spends $94 on Easter rabbits.
All right, all right. I'll take it back. I never knew you could be so mean.
Oh, take it back.
I wish my poor granddaddy was still alive. He'd never let you treat me like this.
All of a sudden, she's got a granddaddy. I never heard you mention him before.
Well, he was the best friend I ever had. I took his advice on everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He could have settled a lot of our problems. I bet he'd tell you to let me keep the choker.
How do you know?
Because I know. And when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask him.
Suppose he isn't in heaven.
Then you can ask him.
Oh, good night, Blanche.
Good night, John.
You've been listening to Carl Amari and Lisa Wolfe as John and Blanche Bickerson in The Honeymoon Is Over.
And you've been listening to Roger Badish as our announcer. Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, Roger.
You're very welcome. I love it. I got to tell you, I mentioned this a little bit when we went over this earlier.
Yeah.
I've performed this.
Yeah, that's
this
right.
This episode.
At the Museum of Broadcast Communications,
that's right.
Right?
That was back when I was working with the Northside Group.
So which part did you play?
You know which part I played.
you were John Bickerson?
I was.
Ah.
I thought, you know.
You know, it's a fun part to play.
I love the Bickerson.
Very fun part.
Very well written.
It works well for us, I think.
Yeah perfectly. Phil, you actually wrote this one, didn't you? No.
actually, Phil Rapp wrote this, and he also wrote the Bickersons. I mean, Baby Snooks and Daddy.
Oh, another show.
Those
sure.
Those were two of his shows. So we appreciate you for helping us out,
you did
Roger.
A great job,
my
Roger.
Pleasure,
you're the
guys.
Best.
Thanks so much.
And we appreciate Steve in Chicago for suggesting that Lisa and I play the Bickersons. He says, you bicker all the time, so why not play the Bickersons?
He's got
that
our
was,
number.
That was a lot of fun. All right, in our next hour, we are going to tune in to Nick Carter, Master Detective, starring Lon Clark. Back to the WGN Radio Theater. This is hour three of our 100th show. And I have Blanche Bickerson to my right here, the vivacious Blanche Bickerson.
Yeah, that, you know, that edge comes naturally.
I have Mike Estella here. I have Elif Garris. I have Roger Badish. And I have Twitter and Facebook.
You have no idea.
I caught a case at Twitter. I tell you, I'm going to have to get a... an antibiotic for
that. It's not enough hopping. That's the problem.
Yeah, I got to get an antibiotic. Get rid of that Twitter. I'll tell you what, man. Yeah, Twitter is...
If only antibiotics could get rid of your issues, it would be amazing.
If it were only that
just so simple.
If it were that simple, I would be at the doctor every day. It's fun doing this show every Saturday and Sunday night.
Sure is.
And
especially tonight,
we had some champagne a little earlier.
I had like a sip, and you finished mine. I'm just going to put that out there.
She wouldn't re-drink out of it because I drank out of the glass.
You know what?
He left
that little backwash at the bottom, just that teeny bit, and
Roger,
I didn't want it anymore.
I brush my teeth once a week, whether I need to or not. And she's having a problem with this. I don't get it.
It was just backwash in the cup. Yeah. It didn't
I'm
look
drinking
appealing.
Olives. So.
There you go. We're all a team here. We just share germs. It's no problem.
Didn't you say last week that you had cobwebs in your teeth, or was that in your brain?
Cobwebs in the brain, and then I have fur on my teeth. Fur. Yeah.
And now you wonder why I don't like to share.
So,
right.
In this hour, it's Nick Carter, Master Detective with the Glass Coffin, starring Lon Clark. And I had dinner with Lon Clark years ago, Roger. You would love this. I had dinner with him. And what an interesting guy. Just a terrific guy. He's Nick Carter on this. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor will reprise his role as Robert McCall in the crime thriller The Equalizer 2, based on the TV series. And if you are a winner, you will get a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's.
All right. Lou Malnati's Pizza, my favorite pizza.
It's the best.
All right. So here's a hint. Well, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Eli in 2010's The Book of Eli.
Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me.
312-981-7200. Do you know who that very famous actor is? Call us, and we'll find our winner, and they'll win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. Weekday mornings, it has everything you need to know and some things you just need to see. WGN-TV Morning News is Chicago's must-watch morning news.
Welcome back. This is still our 100th show. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me.
And we've got Todd on the line from Elgin. Hey, Todd.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you
happy
doing?
100.
Thank you, thank
Thanks,
you.
Todd.
We're glad you're with us tonight, and we're hoping that you know that actor's voice.
Denzel Washington.
You are right, Todd. You are a winner. You've won a $25 gift certificate for Lumel Nati's. You can have a great pizza, home of Chicago's best deep dish, and you can check them out at one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and look at their menu online at lumelnati's.com. Thank you so much. We hope you have a great pizza on us.
Awesome, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
Take
Todd.
Care.
Appreciate you, my friend. All right, so this is the WGN Radio Theater, episode 100. We're into triple digits now, Lisa. So that means I have to write one more. I have to hit one more button.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of extra work.
Right.
You know?
I'll have to chip in a little bit.
So help me out with that.
Every now and then I'll do a little work,
right?
too.
I appreciate that. Okay, so we are going to tune in to a Nick Carter Master Detective episode. And I was telling Roger a little earlier, years ago in Cincinnati, I'll never forget this, we did I went to a Friends of Old Time Radio convention. That's what it was called. I don't think they have them anymore. And there was a lot of great actors there. Willard Waterman was there. And I think I told you I did a reenactment of a Gildersleeve. And I got to play Leroy on that with Willard Waterman. I mean,
right.
He played Gildersleeve on radio
right.
and on television. Well, they also, I don't know if it was this time or a different time that I went, they did a Nick Carter Master Detective recreation, and I got to be the bad guy on there.
Well, that makes sense.
And I was talking like this, you know, hey.
That's how the bad guys talk.
And Lon Clark, along with Charlotte Manson. Charlotte Manson played his secretary, Patsy, on it. She was there. I think she had very bad vision problems, but she could still see out of one eye, and she played Patsy Bowen, and it was fantastic. Here I am up there on the stage with Lon Clark. He was playing Nick Carter, and I mean, for me, this is like the greatest thing ever, right? Somebody else might like, who cares? Okay, but I'm a geek, you know, and this is like, I'm about as geeky as they can be about these radio stars.
No, I know.
And here I am up there on the stage in front of all these people.
With the best of the best.
With Lon Clark, the real Nick Carter. He played Nick Carter on the whole series. It was on the air for many, many years. And then afterwards, I had dinner and sat right with him and had dinner, and he was just telling all these stories about being Nick Carter. And, you know, in front of the studio audience and all this different stuff. It is just great.
No, it makes you feel special.
So much fun. I'll never forget that. He was just a very, very nice man. So you're going to hear Lon Clark as Nick Carter. Now, this was a detective series first seen in Street and Smith dime novels and pulp magazines. And like Sherlock Holmes, Nick Carter solved cases too tough for the police, which earned him the moniker Master Detective. Now, Lon Clark played him through the whole run from 1943 all the way to 1955. For a time, it was sponsored by Old Dutch Cleanser. I don't think that's around anymore, Lisa. Do you clean your kitchen sink with Old Dutch Cleanser?
I don't clean.
Probably. She has maids for that. Patsy Bowen, Nick's assistant, was played by Helen Choate and Charlotte Manson. And Scubby Wilson, the reporter, was played by John Caine. So 13-year run. And then there was a movie series, MGM put out a movie series, Walter Pigeon played Nick Carter in the movies. So let's go back to September 27th, 1943, the very first year this was on the air. It was from the first season. Here's Lon Clark in The Glass Coffin, part one of Nick Carter, Master Detective.
All right, Patsy, out you go. This is it.
This is what, Nick?
A studio of magnificent pictures, of which Joseph Stone is the owner and director.
Well, there goes another illusion. I thought movie studios were all bright lights and glamour. This place looks like a stage set for The Deserted Village.
Well, it's been locked up for the past 10 years or so.
Oh.
That's funny. The gate's locked.
And that's our cue to turn around and go home again. You've got a nice, tasty jewel robbery waiting for you to solve back in town, and you should be working on that. Instead of being way out here at the end of nowhere, playing around a forgotten movie studio.
I guess I'll have to pick the lock.
Okay, if you must. Patient Patsy will bear with your little game.
This is no game, Patsy.
Why, what do you mean?
The house of Lulu Doré, the star of Stone's new picture, was broken into last night while she was at a dance. She was wearing her jewels, including the famous emeralds. Fortunately, though, nothing was stolen. There we are. All right, Patsy, go ahead.
Seems funny there isn't a gatekeeper around.
It does, doesn't it? Well, I guess they haven't got a full staff for the studio, considering they moved back from Hollywood just to do this one show.
Why did they do that, Nick?
Oh, Doré had a run-of-the-pay contract for the show she's doing on Broadway and couldn't go west.
Hey there, where do you think you're going?
Oh, so there is a Gateman. I'm looking for Mr. Stone's office.
Well, you can't see him.
I'm afraid you don't understand. I'm Nicholas Carter. Mr. Stone's expecting me.
I'm taking my orders from Lieutenant Riley of the Metropolitan Police. He says to admit no one.
Riley? What's he doing here?
Investigating a murder.
Murder? I thought you said robbery, Nick.
What murder?
Come on, get out of here. I got my orders.
Come on, Patsy. Let's find Riley or Joe Stone.
Hey, you can't do that. Come back here.
It's all right. I'll explain to the police. Hurry, Patsy. Hurry.
What is this, Nick?
It's what I plan to find out right now. Then I take it this fellow Boyd, who's been killed, is a fairly unimportant chap, eh, Mr. Stone?
Well, yes. He was just a darn good electrician.
Huh. Doesn't seem to be any connection between his murder and the attempted robbery of Miss Doré.
Well, no, there doesn't.
Is Lieutenant Riley here now?
Yes, he's over on Stage 5. It's that building over there. Do you want me to come with you?
Yes, I wish you would, Mr. Stone. There may be points I'd like to ask you about.
Well, I'd be glad to help, of course, if I can help.
There's one thing I don't understand, Mr. Stone. You say Boyd was shot in the back with a poisoned arrow from a blowgun. It's an odd weapon. Should be fairly easy to trace.
You don't have to trace it very far, Mr. Carter. The blowgun and the arrow were mine.
Yours?
Yes, well, you see, 11 years ago, I tried to do a picture about a voodoo witch doctor. We used the blowgun and it. I don't suppose you remember the picture, Mr. Carter. It was called The Voodoo Curse.
Oh, yes, I do. You had a bit of trouble over it, I believe.
A bit of trouble? It practically drove me into bankruptcy. I'd imported a real voodoo witch doctor from Haiti, and he put a curse on the whole studio.
Oh, come now, Stone. You don't really believe that.
I don't know what I believe anymore. 11 years ago, we had fires, we had explosions, we had mysterious thefts. We had just about everything. It got so that everybody was scared to work here. I had to close the studio, and now we have a murder.
Why should the witch doctor put a hex on you?
Oh, I had an argument with him, though, with her salary of some sort. He swore he'd break me, and he almost did. Well, here, this is Stage 5 here.
Well, Nicholas Carter.
Hiya, Riley.
And Patsy.
Hello.
Well, what might you be doing here?
He's come to help you, Lieutenant.
Well, that's very obliging of him, I'm sure. Say, was that a crack?
Why, of course not.
Well, let's get to work. Riley, where was the body found?
Right over there by that door, Nick, where the chalk marks are.
I wonder what he was doing way over here.
He was setting up the stage, as I told you.
But all his equipment's over there, clear across the set. Riley. How was he pacing when he died?
He was lying on his face with his head towards that door, Nick.
Shot in the back, wasn't he?
Yep. We figured from the angle of the arrow that the blowgun fella must have been sitting up there on that catwalk when he killed him.
Mr. Stone, what's behind that door that Boyd was heading for?
Well, special electrical equipment, I believe, for special effects.
Would Boyd have known that?
Yes, of course. He worked on this stage years ago. He probably would have remembered.
That's it, then. He was going into that room to see if he could find some special equipment he needed. That accounts for his being way over here.
And you think there was something in there the killer didn't want him to see, Nick?
Right, Riley. Let's go in.
Door's locked, Nick.
Oh, Stone, give me your keys, will you?
Keys? I have no keys for these rooms.
Well, did Boyd have any?
Well, I believe he had borrowed the caretaker set.
Riley, did you search the corpse?
Of course I did, Nick.
No keys?
No keys.
I can get a locksmith out from the village.
What? You have no duplicates?
Well, the place has been locked up so long, I never expected to come back here. Was trying to sell it, as a matter of fact.
Pick the lock, Nick. This seems to be your day for doing that.
Just what I'm going to do, Patsy.
I'll get you more light.
Oh, he doesn't need light. He can see in the dark, practically.
No, you don't have to see to pick a lock. There. There. And there. That's it.
Now we'll get a look at what your killer didn't want Boyd to see. Here, here's a light switch.
Oh, wait. Don't crowd in like that. Uh-huh. Look.
Footprints.
Footprints in the dust. Golly, Nick, there goes your theory. Boyd was here before he was killed and took out whatever it was he wanted. Well, it was a cute theory while it lasted.
Maybe it's still a cute theory, as you call it.
All we have to do now, Nick, is to measure the prints and see if they're Boyd's or not.
They're not.
How do you know?
Yeah, you haven't even seen the body.
These prints were made by leather-soled shoes. Right, Riley?
Well, yeah, you're right, but...
And Boyd was wearing rubber soles.
How do you know he was, Nick?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Stone. Don't all technicians on a soundstage wear rubber-soled shoes to kill any noise that the soundtracks might pick up?
Well, you're right, Carter, they do.
Now, those leather sole prints mean that it wasn't Boyd, but our friend the murderer who used the keys he took from Boyd to get in here.
You lead to that crate. Let's see what's in it.
No, don't walk on the footprints. We need them as evidence. I'll wager you'll find the crate empty. The murderer didn't just walk over to it, look in, and walk out again. Oh, no. He took away everything he didn't want Boyd or anyone else to find.
You're right, Nick. The crate is empty.
Shall we search the room, Nick?
What's the point in that? If there was anything here, it's gone by now. Murderer seen to that. I wonder what was in this crate. I wonder if...
Help! Help! No!
Oh, Nick, the poor kid.
What is it, Carter?
Another murder.
Another? Good Lord.
Can you identify him, Stone?
Why, it's Bill Daly, our camera punk.
Camera punk? What's that?
Oh, it's studio slang for assistant to the cameraman.
You people are run too fast for me. Hey, what's up here?
See for yourself, Riley.
Well, good gosh, another murder. And it looks from his position as if he was just coming out of that door over there.
Well, that's funny. Both he and Boyd...
Any idea what he was doing around here, Stone?
Yes, I sent him over here myself about an hour ago to look in that warehouse, see if there was any of that old photographic equipment we could remodel and use. Priorities, you know. Daly was very clever at that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a mean-looking knife he's got sticking in his throat, Nick.
Knife? Good Lord.
What is it, Mr. Stone?
That knife is from that same voodoo picture.
There seem to be a few too many of those old props hanging around. Are there any more?
Yes, there's a complete stock of weapons. Everything we used in that confounded picture.
The voodoo curse?
Yes.
I rather think I'd like to see that film, Stone. Is there a copy of it around here anyplace?
Well, as much as we ever shot of it, it was never finished, you know.
Could you rent it off for me?
Well, certainly I will. I'll go arrange it now.
Thanks.
Well, Nick, what do you think?
I'm not sure. Any opinions yourself?
Yes. My money's on Stone's doing it.
Stone? Why in the world would he do it?
Well, I don't know. I haven't figured out the reason for it yet, but he acts kind of funny. Nervous, sort of. And he keeps talking about the place maybe being haunted.
Oh, good heavens, Riley. Who wouldn't be nervous with all this murder going around? I know I am.
Well, take the weapons, Nick. They all belong to him.
But other people could have access to them, Riley. After all, Stone hasn't been here for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something more important you've overlooked, Riley.
Mm-hmm. What's that, Nick?
How did Stone manage to throw that knife at Daly while he was with us?
How do I know? We were all so busy looking at that storeroom on the set, he could have sneaked up. By golly, I'll bet that's how he did do it.
Oh, that's Stone beckoning to us. You want to go to see the movies, Riley?
I got better things to do, Nick. I'm going to search this joint.
How about you, Patsy?
Sure thing. But why do you want to see it?
I'm not sure, Patsy. But I've got sort of a hunch that the answer to all our questions lie hidden in that old picture.
Did all movie projectors make this racket 10 years ago?
Most of them, Patsy.
Mm.
Now listen.
You don't believe in our voodoo magic, eh? Well, if you've been here long enough to see some of the things I've seen.
Really, Ross, there's something uncanny about these natives. Call it coincidence if you like.
Who's the woman? Gosh, she's good looking.
That's Lula Dorey, the star of the picture Stone's shooting here now.
Don't their voices sound funny and tinny?
Yeah, they certainly do.
Easy enough to scoff when you've just come down from the States. But it is magic. No other way to explain some of the things that happened.
Magic? Mumbo-jumbo, you mean? You'll never convince me it's anything else. I suppose this is another of those wild dancers.
Now, there's a really good voice. Who is he, Nick?
Now, don't tell me you don't remember him, Patsy. Uh-uh. His name was Bart Tyson, great leading man, 10 years back.
Oh, I remember his name, of course.
This is rather better than most of the dancers I've seen.
Patsy, I've heard that voice very recently.
Picture must be almost over now, Nick. Have you discovered anything?
I'm not sure yet.
Gosh, they had some pretty fancy photography in those days. I thought all that underwater swimming stuff was comparatively new.
Oh, no. Stone was the first person to use it.
Well, how did they do it?
Look at that man swimming. It couldn't be faked.
It isn't. It was taken through some sort of a glass tank.
That native has been underwater for 20 minutes. No human can hold his breath that long. That's what I've been telling you, Ross. They're magic, these natives. Magic. Maybe you're right.
That voice. I've heard it somewhere before myself. I never heard Tyson act before. Hey, don't we see the ending?
Nope. That's all they made, Patsy. The picture wasn't finished.
Well, did you find out what you wanted to?
I'm not quite sure.
Well, Mr. Carter, did you like the picture?
Oh, very interesting, Stone.
Oh, that little Dory certainly is beautiful, isn't she, Mr. Stone? I've never seen her in pictures before. Has she done anything else?
No, nothing. Until now that she's starring in my new show on Broadway.
That's funny. I think with her looks and her voice, she'd be a sensation.
That's what I've always claimed, but, well, she got scared off after all these things happened during the filming of this one, and, well, she's stuck to Broadway ever since. And when Tyson, her leading man, was hurt, she rather felt...
Oh, I was wondering what happened to Tyson. From what I could gather from this show, he should have been a natural for talkies.
Oh, he was. But we had a bad explosion, and his whole face was terribly scarred. That's why we could never finish this picture. He never could act in pictures again.
Oh, what a shame.
Well, Stone, thanks for showing us the film. Mind if we scout around after Riley?
Oh, no, not at all. If you need me, I'll be on stage 3. We're going to start shooting soon.
Good.
It's funny about Dore. She seems to be cropping up in our lives all over the place.
Yes, she does, doesn't she? Patsy, if you find a telephone, get hold of Scubby.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what you can about Bart Tyson and what's happened to him since the accident.
Okay, Nick. Where you be?
If I don't see you before, I'll meet you at Stone's office at noon.
Right.
Oh, Nick! Nick Carter!
Oh, Riley. Just looking for you. You found anything yet?
Yeah, we found all the weapons from that voodoo movie. All except the ones we'd already found, that is.
How'd you know you found them all?
Stone had an inventory. We checked on it.
Well, if your theory about Stone's correct, Riley, he could have falsified that inventory.
Well, why should he?
Well, perhaps he had a couple of weapons hidden somewhere and doesn't want us to know anything about them.
Nick, the more I think about it, the less I like that guy.
Find anything else?
No, not a blessed thing.
Search the whole lot, have you?
All but stage 9 over there. That's locked up tighter than a drum. I can't pick locks the way the great Carter does.
Okay, I'll take care of those. Riley, why don't you go on down to stage 3? They're going to start shooting the picture pretty soon, and I'd feel a lot more comfortable if someone were on guard there. We've had enough murders for one day.
That is definitely an organ, Lisa. It's not a piano. It's not a guitar.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a body part.
It's not a. That is definitely an organ right there on the Nick Carter. You know, Mutual Radio had an organ. They were a big network, but they were like, yeah, just use an organ. Don't, you know, it's too much money for a whole orchestra.
It's a very effective instrument.
Yeah, CBS and NBC had the full orchestra. Mutual. One person, organist. And, I mean, the listener doesn't really know any difference. I mean, it's like, it works. It's transitional music. Who cares?
I like the organ.
Right? I like these Nick Carter Master Detective shows as well. All right, we'll get back to Nick Carter Master Detective in a few minutes, but let's take a quick break here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Talk about crazy conventions. You should have seen the one in 1912 here in Chicago. Roosevelt lost to Taft. It was epic, and he's going to tell us all about it. But tickets are almost sold out to our live spontaneous conversation with me, John Williams, and TR. August 13th, College of DuPage. Return of Teddy Roosevelt, presented by Conasec and Dillon Trial Attorneys. Go to WGNradio.com/events now.
All right. I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a website for this show. It's WGNradiotheater.com. And we have a full schedule there. I think we just recently updated it. So you have all of the shows we're playing every Saturday and Sunday night are there. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. And our schedule is at that website, WGNRadiotheater.com. When you click through to the main website, there's a store which has tons and tons of classic radio shows available on CD and via digital download. And we're always adding more shows there, all digitally remastered. They all sound great. And then there's pictures of Lisa. I mean, like tons and tons of pictures of Lisa. I don't know how that happens. I don't know how all these pictures just organically show up there, but they do. I think she has photographers on her payroll.
I believe it was you that was begging for the pictures this evening.
I was?
Yes.
I was begging. Begging you for pictures.
Well, begging.
Wow, I don't recall that.
Really?
Boy, I must have bad short-term memory. So, Blanche. And what else? Oh, and we have a Facebook page. Just hop on Facebook and search for this show, WGN Radio Theater. Also, we have a Twitter, and I'm not even going there.
And I'm watching the text line, and everybody's been really so nice and kind about our 100th show and very supportive, and we do appreciate our listeners.
Yes, we have very loyal listeners. We really appreciate you guys. Tell a friend about this show. You know, we were talking about this earlier. This is like an escapism. This show, even for me doing the show, it's like an escape because I'm listening to these radio shows and, you know, being browbeaten by Lisa. That's kind of an escape, too. But listening to these radio shows, it's a fun 6 hours over the weekend to just not have to worry about anything, relax, get ready for bed.
It's a vacation.
It's a little vacation. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And
Carl, you're no vacation.
But I think that's why I think people like these classic radio shows because it lets them unwind and just enjoy and get caught up in the theater of the imagination. And these shows are so magical, and that's why we want to keep them on the air forever here on WGN. A little earlier, Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, was here, along with Dave Weiske, and they gave away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky listeners. And then he texted in and said, wow, this is going to really come in handy. I have 17 cats.
Isn't that amazing?
17.
I think the right guy won this time.
You know what? That's a lot of meowing.
It's a lot of cats.
That's a lot of cats.
He could probably use some cat litter, I'm just guessing.
So that year's supply will probably last a month.
Right, exactly.
With 17 cats. But you know what? He's going to see how great Fresh and Light Ultimate Care is, and he's going to want to switch because it's the best kitty litter in the world.
I'm sure we'll hear from him.
And if you out there in Radioland would like to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, you could be the lucky winner next month. In exactly a month, Dan Jaffe will be here again and pick another name out of the hat. There was it's actually a microphone bag. It's not a hat, actually. But we put all the names in there, and Dan just picks one out. So here's all you have to do. Just send a photo of you and your kitty cat and your cat's name and your city and state and email it to us here at catspridephoto@gmail.com. Right, Lisa?
If you're shy, you can just send your cat.
Yeah,
that's okay,
you don't have to
too.
Be in the picture. you do not have to be in the picture, but it's nice to see the owner with the cat. You know, it's fun. And just send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. We do post it, but if you don't want us to post it, just let us know, right?
Right.
All right. It's easy. Easy peasy.
Nothing easy.
All right. Let's tune into the conclusion now of The Glass Coffin on Nick Carter, Master Detective.
I suppose you think this is a gag, having us get all dressed up like merry villagers or something.
It's not a gag, Patsy. It's insurance.
What do you mean?
Just what I said. When we're dressed up in our regular clothes, everybody in the lot knows who we are. But anyone seeing us dressed up like this will think we're actors and never look at us twice.
I never thought I'd live to see the day when people wouldn't stare at Nick Carter, Master Detective, all dressed up in knee pants.
Quiet. Did you check with Scubby?
Yep. But just as Stone said, Tyson was hurt in that explosion and then just sort of vanished. Hasn't been heard of since.
That takes care of that. Well, here's stage 9. The only place that hasn't been searched either by Riley or me.
What do you expect to find?
I don't know.
Funny, this door isn't locked. Everything else on the lot has been.
Yes. Riley distinctly said it was locked when he tried it. Well, keep your eyes open. There may be a reason for it being open now.
Golly, it's dark inside here.
Here, take this flashlight.
Okay.
I've got another.
Hey, Nick, look. There's an old makeup table. I wonder what kind of makeup they used in those days.
Patsy, we haven't time to stop for you to look at make.
Look here. Why, this makeup isn't old at all.
What's that?
No, this is the very latest type of movie makeup, and it's all new stuff.
Well, good for you, Patsy. Yes, there's something funny about this.
Definitely, Nick. Well, this panchromatic makeup wasn't developed until Technicolor came in. They didn't use this type of makeup back in the days when this studio was in use. Somebody must have been here since. And none of the actors are making up way over here.
Right, Patsy. I'll make a detective out of you yet. Now let's see if we can find anything else.
Oh, I'm getting creeps, Nick. I don't like it here.
Patsy, I think we're getting warm. This is one of the first real clues we... Hey.
Hmm?
Recognize that?
Wait. Well, that must be the glass tank they used to take that swimming sequence in the voodoo movie.
Right you are. I wonder why they left it half full of water this way.
When they finished taking that scene, they probably just walked off and left it here.
Maybe.
Don't forget they closed this place in a hurry. What are you doing?
Patsy, this water is fresh.
What?
It'd be stale if it'd been here 10 years. Stale and smelly.
Say, I'm beginning to think maybe Stone's right and there is a hex on this place.
Too bad that voodoo picture wasn't in Technicolor. Those colored stones at the bottom of the tank would have showed up beautifully.
They are beautiful, aren't they?
Yes, you bet they... Hey, Patsy.
What?
Look here. Those aren't just colored stones. They're... Douse your lights, Patsy, quick. We've got callers. Duck back here behind this crate.
They're throwing us all in the clink this morning with this snooping.
Why the boss always swipe such important rocks? Why didn't he settle for just a small fry?
The
boss
we're
is
after.
Big time, that's why. He's got enough dough to pay all the bills until that stuff cools off. And when it's safe to handle it, he'll smuggle it out of the country and sell it for plenty.
What's he leave it lying around here for? Hidden in the old equipment.
Now we know why Boyd was
killed. Who would have ever thought anybody would ever come back here?
Gosh, when that punk went into that storehouse, I bet he saw the works.
He did. The boss spotted him going in and just had time enough to get that knife and come back and nail him. And the kid was dashing back the stone to spill the beans.
Gee, the boss is sure lucky.
He ain't lucky, he's smart. He had Lippy planted up on that catwalk just in case somebody got an idea to go into that electrician's storeroom. And somebody did.
Dusty.
That takes brains to know that.
Well, we better get going, huh, Jake?
Yeah, you start draining the tank so we can get the rocks. I'll get the makeup stuff.
Why is he moving everything out now?
He figures it'll cool off by now, and with the stuff he's going to lift from that Doré thing this afternoon...
Nick, I'm going to sneeze.
Hold it, Patsy.
Who's that?
Hey, look. Over there, Jake. Two guys. Only...
Come here. Run for it, Patsy.
Run where? Let go of me, you...
Let her go, you lousy rat.
Get away.
Let her go. Let me let her go.
Hey, I'll handle it,
baby.
Stop
it. Get your
hands off.
I got to get
rough.
Guess that'll hold him.
Oh, what's going
on? It took three of us to knock him cold. He a fighter or something?
Hey, I know him. It's Nick Carter, the Dick.
Well. Nick Carter? Hey. And a good-looking doll.
Well, it's a good thing you called me in time. Now, what are we going to do with them now that we got them, huh? We can't just leave them lying around. Somebody's bound to notice them.
Hey, the fish tank.
Yeah, that's right. We'll throw them in there. Then when they're good and drowned, we'll drain the tank and get them and the other stuff out at the same time.
Good idea, Lippy.
Okay.
Here, Pete, you lift the lid. You shove the girl in, Lippy.
All right.
Jake and I will dump that Carter guy in.
It'll be a real pleasure to do something like this to a copper.
Here, come on.
Ready? Go ahead. Put Carter in first.
Okay, here he goes. Happy swimming, Carter. Yeah.
Now dump the dame in, Jake.
In you go, lady.
That's okay. Hey, listen, guys. Suppose they get out.
We'll see that they don't get out. Stokey.
Huh?
Put the lid down on the tank.
Okay, Jake.
And I'll put this padlock on and they're safe as if they was in jail.
That's good work. Hey, look, boys, they're coming too.
So what? Who cares now?
Yeah, who cares? Lippy.
Huh?
Turn on the water.
Okay. Here she comes, Jake.
Get those two baby spots set up there, will you?
Is this what you want?
That's better. Now, open number two a little more.
Okay.
This is the take. Ready?
Ready.
Okay.
Lights. Camera. Right. Action, Miss Dory.
It was when I first opened your letter that I knew at last. As I opened the...
No, Lula, darling. Mean what you say. Remember, your lover has returned. Now, this is your big moment. Now, relax. Take it easy. Now, come on. Once more. All right, action. Come on.
It was when I first opened your letter that I knew at last. As I opened the envelope, even before I read the words that you'd written there, I realized that what I'd hoped for so long had at last...
What's the matter with those lights? Why aren't they...
Turn on those lights. I'm in charge here. There'll be no confusion.
Quiet, everybody. Quiet.
The masked man.
Who are you to tell me I'm the director on this picture? This is a holdup.
Look here, you. You can't pull a holdup.
Quiet, I said. Quiet if you don't want a bullet in your teeth.
Quiet.
The man's mad. That's better. Now, nobody will get hurt if you just keep quiet and do as you're told. Turn on that spotlight.
Okay, boss.
That's it. Now, all of you, line up against the wall there. Come on, get moving. I don't want to shoot, but I will if you make me. And shut up.
You can't tell me to shut up.
That order includes you too, Riley. Now, don't forget that although you can't see me with this spotlight shining in your eyes, I can see you very clearly. Now, each one of you in turn will step forward and put your valuables on that table and center stage. And don't try to hold out on me or it'll be bad for you. All right. We'll start with a star performer, Miss Lulu Doré. Please, Miss Doré, if you think I can't see you trying to hide behind the drapes over there, you're wrong. You're in this, too. Your jewels, please.
No, not my emeralds. Surely you won't...
Surely I will. It's those emeralds I'm particularly interested in. You don't think I care for the little wristwatches and pocketbooks I'm going to get from the rest of these people, do you?
But you can't mean to take my
emeralds. One more word out of you, and I'll come after them myself. And if I do it...
Stand where you are, Tyson. I've got you covered.
Nick Carter!
Nick, praise be, is that you?
Come and get me, Carter.
Watch him, Riley, if you can. Turn the lights on, Patsy.
Right, Nick. Here they are.
There he goes, Nick! I missed him, darn it. Did you see where he went, Nick?
There he goes, Mr. Carter, climbing up the catwalk. Tyson, come down from there or I'll shoot.
You haven't got a gun, Nick Carter. Yours is too wet to shoot after your little swim. But I've got my gun. Here!
You missed me, Tyson, but I won't miss you. You may not know it, but my guns are absolutely waterproof.
Go! Nice work, Carter. You shot the gun right out of his hand.
And now your gun's gone, Tyson. Come on down.
Yeah? Come up here and get me. You haven't caught me yet. So long.
Look at him run. He should make a misstep or lose his balance up there. He'd fall off and get hurt.
Tyson! Tyson, stop! Stop! Look out! You don't slip there!
Nick! He lost his balance!
Watch out, Tyson!
You say you want us to drop you at headquarters, Riley?
If you will, Nick.
Okay. Your men got the rest of Tyson's gang, all right?
They did. They're coming right behind us.
Was Tyson badly hurt from his fall?
No, not much. Just a broken ankle. He'll be all right. All right, that is, until he gets to the electric chair.
Oh, Nick, when I think of how close we came to drowning, I'm scared all over again.
Hey, how did you say you got out of that tank, Nick?
Believe it or not, Lieutenant. He cut a piece of that heavy glass with a diamond in his ring.
Well, what do you know? But look, if it was as easy as all that, well, what took you so long doing it, Nick?
I had to wait until the thugs got out of the room. Then I just cut a nice little circle out of the glass right beside where the padlock was, reached out, and picked the lock. All very simple.
Simple for you, maybe. Not for me. And you say you found the jewels Tyson had stolen in the bottom of the tank, eh?
Yes, Riley. What Patsy and I had thought were pretty colored stones turned out to be all the jewels Tyson had stolen during the last 10 years, all unmounted and dumped in with the pebbles in the tank.
But what made you first suspect Tyson, Nick?
Well, Patsy, it was his voice first. Remember I told you after we saw him in the movie that I knew I had heard his voice somewhere very recently?
Oh, so that's why that voice sounded so familiar.
Can you imagine that? A movie star turned crook.
Then there was the fact that Tyson had faded so completely out of sight after his accident. That looked fishy to me. No great star would have let his career be ruined without bringing a suit of some kind. Unless he had some plans of his own.
And from what I learned from Scubby, we realized he never had brought suit.
Yes, and a suit like that would have made all the tabloids.
But how did you know Tyson and the Watchman were the same?
I didn't, Patsy. Until you found that makeup kit. That panchromatic makeup is often used to cover scars. And then I remembered the scarred gateman. It fitted. So did his voice, and the fact that he had the only remaining set of keys to the lot. And, of course, he had all the opportunity in the world.
But I bet you didn't realize that the murders were tied up with the robberies. Not until we heard those crooks talking, I mean.
Well, the makeup kit told me that, too. Remember, Patsy, how you always claimed that all those robberies were done by individuals, not a gang?
Yes, but I still don't see...
Well, Tyson was a consummate actor, and he had complete knowledge of makeup. He disguised himself as a different character, I imagine, for each robbery. Evidently, he played his role expertly, since he succeeded in giving the impression that different people were committing the various thefts.
But say, if that makeup was so good, well, why couldn't he have gone back to the movies instead of turning thief?
Well, Riley, it was good enough for dim lights, but not for the sharp eyes of the camera.
Oh, I see.
Poor fellow. What an end for a great star.
Yes. The explosion probably injured his mind, too.
One more thing, Nick. How did he get to be caretaker?
Oh, I asked Stone that. He said he felt sorry for the man and had given him the job out of kindness.
Oh?
Well, that's all over now.
Except that from now on I'm allergic to water anywhere, except in drinking glasses.
This was another strange experience of Nick Carter, Master Detective, called The Glass Coffin, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Voodoo Curse. Another of the curious adventures of Nick Carter, which are brought to you regularly at the same time by WOR Mutual. In the strange adventure you've just heard, Nick Carter was impersonated by Lon Clark, Patsy by Helen Choate. The story was written for Nick Carter by Nancy and Gene Webb. Original music was played by Lou White. The entire production was under the direction of Jock McGregor. Next week at the same time, another curious experience of Nick Carter entitled
The Flying Duck Murders, or Nick Carter and the Mysterious Gold Thieves.
This story is a copyrighted feature of Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. The Return of Nick Carter is produced in the studios of WOR and is broadcast over most of these stations every Monday evening at 9:30 Eastern Wartime. This is Mutual.
From the very first year on the air, 1943, Lon Clark as Nick Carter, Master Detective in the Glass Coffin, September 27th of that year. And in the cast, Helen Choate. She was the first Patsy, his secretary. And then another actress, Charlotte Manson, played Patsy. Ed Latimer there and Humphrey Davis in the cast, sustaining over Mutual. Hope you enjoyed Nick Carter, Master Detective. And you know what, Lisa? Next week, we will be back here, God willing, and we will have six more classic radio shows. We will start things off on Saturday with Fibber McGee and Molly. Then it's The Shadow. And then a good Western on Have Gun Will Travel. On Sunday, we'll start things off with Our Miss Brooks with Eve Arden. Then it's Inner Sanctum Mysteries and The Whistler. That's our lineup for next week. That's a pretty good lineup.
Sounds good. You, I know we've been listening to our listeners.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
That's what they've been asking
And
for.
Our listeners said we want comedy, so that we're starting each Saturday and Sunday off with a comedy. You pick all these shows. You do a good job.
Well,
Lisa.
I'm trying to
she
keep everybody
them,
happy.
Picks them out, edits them, writes all of our copy, writes the commercials, produces
I wrote
them.
The radio shows too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. You know what? Four or five people asked us to tell the story of how we met.
Yes,
we didn't do that.
You didn't do that.
Yeah, we were supposed to do that. And we have a couple minutes. We can do that. So one day two worlds collided and there was the Big Bang. That's that
yes.
was the first thing that happened. There was stars colliding. There was a Big Bang, and then there was Genesis. And then years and years, millions and millions and millions of years later, I met you.
That's true.
You know, that's kind of how
I kind of walked in. We'll have to elaborate.
Yeah. Well, real quick, what happened was this was going back. I'm guessing. We started the other radio. We have another radio show that we do. We started that one in 2009. So I think I met you in 2008.
That's about right, yeah.
Yeah. I met you in 2008. Oh, it was a very good year, right? Met Lisa in 2008. I was producing a series called the Twilight Zone Radio Dramas, and there's Nick DiGilio. Hi, Nick. And we and then Lisa came in because she's an actress, and she auditioned for a Twilight Zone radio drama, and which Nick has been in some of those. Nick DiGilio has been in the Twilight Zone. You feel like you're in the Twilight Zone all the time when you're
that
in
was,
here with me and
you
Lisa,
know what?
Right?
That was honestly my first audition for an
a
audio
radio
drama.
Yeah. And Lisa came in. This is, we're telling the story how we met, because it's our 100th show tonight.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And so Lisa came in to audition for a Twilight Zone radio drama.
In 2008. Mm-hmm.
And you were late.
No, I wasn't late.
Yeah, you were late coming to the studio.
I was lost.
She got lost. Yeah. And so she called me on the phone, and she's like, I am lost. And she was giggling. She was lost and giggling.
I felt awful.
And I thought, here this person is auditioning for it. She's late, she's lost, and she's giggling. And so I thought,
better
that's
than crying.
Pretty interesting. Then she came in, and she did a great job, and we hit it off. We started talking, and you were making me laugh. I was making you laugh. And at that time, I was looking for a sidekick, a compadre, a co-host of our other radio show. And so I said, hey, Lisa, why don't you know what? You could be just right for something.
Well, yeah, it wasn't quite that simple. But you did tell me to, you know, when I start this radio show, you'll come by and you can check it out and see what
and
you think.
And don't say anything.
Don't talk.
Yeah, just don't
just
talk.
Just sit there and don't
sit
speak.
Sit there and look pretty. Because it's radio. You want to look pretty.
So I did just that.
Yeah. And then here we are.
Shortly thereafter.
And here we are.
Everybody else left you.
That was in 2009.
everybody else left. Nobody could
abandoned
work with Carl.
Me.
Yeah.
But I just kept moving up the ladder while everybody else just sort of went on their way.
You have those same kind of stories, right, Nick? You've been on the air so many years. People come and go. They abandon you.
Yeah, I have... I've been part of this radio station for 31 years.
Wow.
So I've seen lots of people come and go.
Yeah, lots of people.
The good ones stay.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, or the good ones come back.
Yeah.
You know, like Steve Cochran, for instance.
Well, right, exactly.
So, but yeah, no, it's been interesting to see, you know, over the course of the years, just what's going on, especially in terms of management.
Yeah.
Like, you know, watching GMs and you know, PDs just come and go.
Yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah.
There have been some rough spots, man. There have. Over the years, there have been some rough spots, particularly between 2008 and 2010. Bit of a nightmare to work here, though.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Or you didn't want to get up and come on down here.
No, it was awful.
Oh,
wow.
It was awful to work here between
and
those two.
You know,
and
I didn't work here then. I mean, I've only been here for a year and a half.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, the management here now is,
the best.
And I mean, unbelievably amazing.
Yeah, we do feel very,
so
very lucky.
Awesome.
Todd and Jimmy are
just amazing.
Amazing guys.
Yeah.
And I love working for them.
And
I've never been happier.
Stephanie.
And I've been here. Stephanie rules, of course. I've never been, you know, like I said, I've been around this station for a really long time. It's never felt as good to work here than it has over the past 3.5 years.
Wow, so we're very lucky.
We came in at the right time.
You certainly did. I think you did.
Good
timing. Well, it wasn't a coincidence, exactly, that we came here at that time either.
Yeah.
So Nick DiGilio's up next. What's on the show?
Monday morning movie reviews.
Yes.
We got the big Jason Bourne movie with
Matt Damon.
We're going to review that.
Yeah.
And a really, really great film called Don't Think Twice, which is a film about an improv group in New York. And it's written and directed by Mike Birbiglia. It features Keegan-Michael Keele from Key and Peele.
Oh, yeah. Very funny.
Gillian Jacobs, who played Britta on Community.
Mm-hmm.
They're members of this cast who play this improv group in New York. And what happens when one of the people from the group gets a gig on a Saturday Night Live type show. I think it's phenomenal.
Oh, wow. So, very cool. And is your dad calling in?
He is. He'll call in and tell a joke. Yep.
Well, we will be listening.
Thanks,
Mr. DiGilio.